やったじゃないですか。あーここでなー、ああ時期のなさベイクスタミアベイクスタミアなんですか。 You make a dead man come You make a dead man come。
You're listening to KRML Carmel, California. The news from QNN is next.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington State, a bipartisan Iraq study group released its report. The 10 members briefed the President and Congress, then presented their findings to the public. The report concluded that President Bush's Iraq policy is, quote, not working. After more than 3.5 years of war and more than 2,900 American troops killed, the situation in Iraq was described as, quote, grave and deteriorating, end quote. The Iraq study group recommended that U.S. combat troops be pulled out of Iraq by early 2008. The panel also advised an increase in the number of U.S. troops embedded to train the Iraqis, thus shifting the U.S. military mission from a combat role to a support role. The panel encouraged diplomatic talks with Iraq's neighbors, Syria and Iran, as well as revived efforts to bring about Middle East peace. President Bush today said he takes the Iraq Study Group's recommendations, quote, very seriously. The U.S. military said 10 American troops were killed today in Iraq in 4 separate incidents, including combat and improvised explosive device attacks. 27 American soldiers have died so far in December. Also today in Baghdad's Shiite district Sadr City, a mortar attack on a market followed by a suicide bombing killed at least 8 people, 40 were wounded. Floor debate in the Senate on President Bush's nominee to be the next Defense Secretary, Robert Gates, will start soon. Yesterday, after a full day of confirmation hearings before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Gates won unanimous approval. In London today, Scotland Yard announced it will treat the radiation poisoning death of Alexander Litvinenko, a critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, as murder. He died 2 weeks ago at a London hospital. Near downtown Milwaukee today, an explosion at an industrial complex killed at least 3 people, at least 37 people were reported injured. The blast may have been caused by a propane gas explosion. In southern Oregon, rescuers have concluded their search today for a California man who was stranded on a remote snowy road with his wife and 2 young children. The body of 35-year-old James Kinn was found today in the snow. His wife and children were found by rescuers Monday and are in good condition. NASA's Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft has taken images of what could indicate the presence of liquid water on the surface of Mars. Scientists are excited by the discovery because they say it could help explain if the red planet ever harbored life. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are coming up next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Jamba Juice is warning customers in the southwest states of Nevada, Arizona, and Southern California that strawberries used for juice smoothies may have been contaminated by Listerium, a potentially deadly bacteria. No illnesses have been reported so far. Taco Bell nationwide has removed green onions from its restaurant menus. This comes as test results indicate they may be responsible for the recent E. coli outbreak in the Northeast that sickened at least 65 people in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. The Iraq Study Group's report, released to the public today, is also available for sale at a retail price of $10.95. A portion of the proceeds will go to the National Military Family Association. According to a company that filters spam, the junk email problem has become worse worldwide over the past 6 months. Unsolicited junk email now makes up more than 90%, or 9 out of every 10 emails sent, according to the company. Last week, U.S. mortgage applications were up sharply by more than 8%. The Mortgage Bankers Association reported that this increase was spurred by a surge in home refinancing loans. Interest rates on 30-year fixed-rate mortgages are currently at the lowest level in a year, 5.98%. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.27 a barrel, and at the close...
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's another lovely evening in America. The Iraq Study Group. Their study group. They were meeting in the back corner of the library. The Iraq Study Group, comprised of people like Lee Hamilton, who can whitewash anything, and James Baker, who represented the Saudis against his own people when they were sued over sued for damages. And let's see, who else? What's her name? We've already forgotten her. Sandra Day O'Connor, who cast the deciding vote that gave George Bush the White House in 2000. And Leon Panetta and Lawrence Eagleburger. You know, that man's name just sounds offensive. Eagleburger. Yeah, with a side of snail darter fries. Some bipartisan commission. But they got their little report out finally, and you know, if you dig around on the internet, you too can go and waste a considerable amount of the precious finite hours of your life reading their babbling. And of course, beyond that, we got plenty to talk about tonight. But this is that special night of the week. You know what I mean.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right. It's prayer meeting edition right here on Head On, and we'll find something prayer meeting worthy as we go along the way. Maybe a deadly fundamentalist out there, maybe. But now let's start with the natural starting place. Let's start with the Iraq Study Group. Whose introduction, the letter from the co-chairs, that would be James Baker and Lee Hamilton, begins, at least in my opinion, depressingly. There is no magic formula to solve the problems of Iraq. You know, when something that has cost umpty gazillion dollars begins... There's no magic formula. You know you're screwed. Right? I mean, is that a confession right off the bat that, this is a mess that we can't necessarily get anybody out of? I watched a good bit of the babble and palaver over this report on the various and sundry alphabet soup networks. And I got to... It wasn't inspiring. CNN had Leon Panetta and Lawrence Eagleburger several times during the course of the day, and they were putting the game face forward. They were trying to make it look like that they had actually come up with something. But if you read through it, and I mean I did it, I did more than a cursory glance. I read the entire executive summary. I read the opening, including no magic formula to solve the problems of Iraq. And frankly, it goes downhill from there. That's about as good as it gets, is when they tell you there's no magic formula, because by the time there's no formula, magic or otherwise. This is a mess that does not end well under any circumstance. And I think the people of the United States, and for that matter the Iraqi people, would do well to get their minds around that in a hurry. There is no good end to this rotten circumstance. Some of the other, then we're just at the top end of the document, I understand. And if you want, if there's some part of the document and you've already read it and you want to elaborate on it, I certainly welcome you to do so. But by when they start out and they say that there's no magic formula to solve the problems of Iraq, however, there are actions that can be taken to improve the situation and protect American interests, I know we're dealing with morally bankrupt and ethically dead. And it's many Americans are dissatisfied, not just with the situation in Iraq. And here it comes. Here it comes. Like the freight train in the distance and the little white puffs of smoke, you know, coming into the station. Many Americans are dissatisfied, not just with the situation in Iraq, but with the state of our political debate regarding Iraq. Really? You know what? Co-chairman Hamilton? Co-chairman Baker? Many Americans are dissatisfied with the fact that we are in Iraq. Many Americans, many millions of Americans will remain dissatisfied until such time as we find a leader with the moral courage and the integrity to recognize the evil that being in Iraq is and will begin to get us out of Iraq. Will remain dissatisfied until such times as the firefighters and the cops and the carpenters and the bricklayers and the grocery store clerks and the stonemasons and the heavy equipment operators and the guys who left and women who left ordinary day-in, day-out jobs in America to go off on what dear leader said was a noble mission that turned into a nightmare. We will remain dissatisfied until each and every one of those Americans is home. Already there are something on the order of 2,900 and approaching 3,000 who have come home in boxes, who have come home and landed at Dover, Delaware Air Force Base with no notice, no mention, no ceremony, whose bodies have been sent down ramps out of the back, roller ramps out of the backs of planes, whose encased corpses have been hauled with forklifts into airport hangars and warehouses. And this report says that maybe, just maybe, if we're lucky and we hold our tongue just right and the wind blows just so and everything falls into place perfectly, then we can begin to withdraw troops sometime over a year from now, which for all intents and purposes equates with sometime over the rainbow. Lee Hamilton, James Baker, Sandra Day O'Connor, Leon Panetta, Lawrence Eagleburger, all of them fecklessly and blithely signed the death warrants. Oh, God. signed the death warrants for another 1,000 or more mommies and daddies and granddaddies and grandmas, because, you know, we're losing people over there in their 50s and 60s who are in the military. Brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles, kiddies and cousins, blithely and fecklessly ensured that hell and damnation and grief will be visited on another 1,000 homes, and that another 1,000, 2,000, 10,000 families will be shattered to know that their loved ones have been injured beyond all comprehension. And it is the blitheness of the silk suit and the bespoke shirt and the well-knotted tie and the multi-millionaire's consideration that makes me weep for this nation. There was only one right answer for the Iraq study group. There was only one question. And there is no way to deliver anything but a grade of F to the Iraq study group. Because the only real, viable, honorable, ethical, moral, decent answer that could have been delivered by the Iraq study group is as follows. Leave. Leave now. Not a year and a quarter from now. Don't start thinking about leaving in 2008. Leave now. Fuel the C-5s. Fuel the C-130s. Start flying them into Baghdad International Airport in sort of a reverse Berlin airlift. Get our people out. Because, you see, beyond the executive summary to the Iraq study group's recommendations, which, by the way, will not be followed by George W. Bush, there is talk of things like establishing a diplomatic solution to alleviate the problems. This was a meeting of drunks talking about whether or not they ought to maybe someday go to AA. Because rule one is get sober, get clean. And these guys didn't want to do it. Rule one is that we made this mess. There is no acknowledgement that I have been able to find thus far that the situation in Iraq is our fault. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. It is our fault. It is George Bush's fault. It is Don Rumsfeld's fault. It is Dick Cheney's fault. It is Condi Rice's fault, and yea, verily, it is Colin Powell's fault, who knew all along, and maybe the most culpable, because he knew all along this was wrong, and never had the moral courage to stand up and say so. And the blood of the thousands and the hundreds of thousands falls down like a mighty waterfall across all of those people. Consider the blood. Consider the lives. Consider the feckless ease with which Lee Hamilton and James Baker can say, Well, maybe we'll stop asking young Americans and middle-aged Americans. We'll stop asking them to die sometime in 2008. Maybe 9. Maybe never. I didn't expect much out of the Iraq Study Group report, I'll be honest, and more honest still, I got less than I expected. I don't have to deal with FCC regulations, and I could use some words that, but I try to work around those words. And I saw, you know, again, we're only a couple of sentences into this godforsaken report, and I see our political leaders must build a bipartisan approach to bring a responsible conclusion to what is now a lengthy and costly war. Our country deserves a debate that prizes substance over rhetoric and a policy that is adequately funded and sustainable. That sentence, our country deserves a debate that prizes substance over rhetoric and a policy that is adequately funded and sustainable, is a two-pronged address to Democrats and to Republicans, or so they thought. A debate that prizes substance over rhetoric. That means, George Bush, you gotta stop with the cut-and-run crap. And you gotta stop saying that anybody who opposes your policy wants Al-Qaeda to win, or any of that other happy hogwash that you've been trotting around the country. The second clause of the sentence, a policy that is adequately funded and sustainable. You Democrats, now that you've got the majority, don't you dare turn the money spigot off. We're going to keep bleeding blood, and we're going to keep bleeding money until we reach some ephemeral conclusion. The war is over. The war is lost. When you have lost the war, you end the war, and you go home. How do you ask another 1,000 Americans to be the last 1,000 Americans to die for a lie? How do you do it? Well, you put it in 168 pages or so, and you call it officially. Roll, 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 roll. You call it officially. The Iraq Study Group Report, James A. Baker, III, and Lee Hamilton co-chairs, Lawrence S. Eagleburger, Vernon E. Jordan, Jr., Edwin Meese, III, Sandra Day O'Connor, Leon E. Panetta, William J. Perry, Charles S. Robb, and Alan K. Simpson, Vintage Books, a division of Random House, Inc., New York. That is how you ask another 1,000 people to be the last ones to die for a lie. Oh, this is a fine and fancy little document. Color 8x10 glossy photos with with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. Do you think it might have been valuable to have even one person on this commission who had, so to speak, a dog in the hunt? Do you think it might have been valuable to have at least one person on this commission who had a child or a grandchild or a nephew or a cousin who was standing in the queue in the foul and stinking sands of Iraq, waiting to take their turn stepping in to George's meat grinder? There's a lot of heartbreak that has risen out of this god-awful, vile war. And what we got today from the Iraq Study Group may well be the most heartbreaking thing yet.
Now, among other things, the Iraq Study Group report says that if it is to be implemented, it doesn't need to be implemented piecemeal, it needs to be implemented in toto. Tony Snow came out in front of the cameras today to make damn sure that everyone understood that that is not what would happen. I watched that. I don't have the audio. And I can report to you that the Tony Snow news conference got off to its start with a colloquy between David Gregory from NBC and Tony Snow, in which Tony Snow accused David Gregory of trying to cast the report in partisan lights. And Gregory looked at him and said, "You mean you're accusing me of being partisan because I'm quoting from the report?" And that's about as pretty as it ever got, and got a hell of a lot uglier. I mean, they sort of dance around the truth, and they sort of poke at the truth a little bit. Hey, truth, over there, look here. You're the truth, right? Look. U.S. foreign policy is doomed to failure, as is any course of action in Iraq, if it is not supported by a broad, sustained consensus. The aim of our report is to move our country towards such a consensus. Well, the first part of that sentence is correct. U.S. foreign policy is doomed to failure. The only problem that these tired old men and one woman have is that they did not do the hard work, and they did not do the philosophical soul-searching, and they did not realize that this affair was doomed to failure the minute that George Bush issued the order for shock and awe. I'll leave the screaming to you. I'd like to rage at this. But I won't. My heart is far too broken. I've never read a more elegant death sentence than what I read in the executive summary and the note from the co-chairs and the actual body of the work. This is heart-rending. A death sentence. Go read it. You can link to it, among other places, through CNN.com. It's available as a PDF. And if you're not careful in reading it, you will feel like you're coming a little bit unstuck from reality, and that you're being pulled toward whatever unreality this commission has lived in. And there, of course, are all the thank you, thank you, thank yous. I have not yet found mention of 700... Okay, let's be generous. 650,000 dead Iraqis. The situation in Iraq is grave and deteriorating. There is no path that can guarantee success, but the prospects can be improved. There is, they verged, they worked, they came close. But of course this commission had Republicans on it, so they couldn't get too close to the truth. And the Democrats, well, you know, they had to be bipartisan. We have seen what the Iraq Study Group, well funded in its millions of dollars, can accomplish. Now it is time to show the Iraq Study Group, the White House, and most of all the Democratic majority in Congress what the real answer is. And the answer is out of Iraq now. It ends yesterday. Any other answer is a capitulation. A capitulation to immorality, a capitulation to amorality, a capitulation to the horrid deaths of God knows how many more American servicemen and women, and exponentially more innocent Iraqi civilians. Tell you what, let's go to the phones, Agnes. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm depressed.
Well, you know, 79 points they have, so there it is, and there you have it.
Yeah.
What did you expect to do better?
No, but I remain an optimist, Jim, and you know, I think you know that.
The earliest withdrawal date is 2008. You know it, and I know it.
Well, that's what they say it is.
But, you know, things can happen, and if they start diminishing the appropriations, that in itself will necessitate withdrawal, because they can't sustain a war without money. And if the Appropriations Committee stands fast, then, of course, there's a possibility that, you know, the war could be just phased out.
Well, but part of their recommendation is that that not happen.
Well, I don't know. Maybe another commission could meet after this, but when the new Democratic Party representatives meet, I don't know. Nothing in government is ever set in stone. That's what they got to remember.
How in God's name does the likes of Edwin Meese wind up on this commission?
Oh, I don't know. Who, Stove Red Meese?
Yeah.
Who's ever known to steal a red hot stove with barehanded?
Mm.
Who knows? I mean, you know, it's just, look, all of these people, including George Bush, are referred to by this speaker as Mr. Payday. And you know who that is? Mr. Payday is the kind of guy who uses the public toilet, does number two, and purposely doesn't flush it.
Yeah. Jim, you've got some audio going in the background. It's making it hard for me to hear you.
I know it. And my speakers have just crawled up there for a second. They do that. If you can just spare me a second, I will kill them totally.
I'd appreciate that.
I'm very sorry.
That's okay. We try, you know, we're all civilized here. There we go. Ah, sounds like success.
Back to you.
Thank you, Jim.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's like the verbal equivalent of a hall of mirrors.
Well, but like I say, that's Mr. Payday. That's the classification I put those people in, and that's what they've been doing for the past 6 years.
Now, I mean, there are some sensible statements in this thing.
Oh, I've seen it.
Have you been able to read the whole thing yet?
Not all, but I saw the executive summary.
Tony Snow said at 1 o'clock this afternoon he'd read the whole thing and poked fun at David Gregory for not having done so.
Well, I don't think Tony Snow's telling the truth. I don't think Tony Snow could read 79 pages and probably 79 hours, to be honest with you.
You know, one of the things that did make sense, I like the diplomatic descriptions that are in here. Things like suggesting that there must be a renewed and sustained commitment by the United States to a comprehensive Arab-Israeli peace on all fronts, Lebanon, Syria, and the two-state solution for Israel and Palestine.
Well, the only thing I can understand about this, now that we've gone in there and have completely destabilized that region, what we're dealing with is hope against hope that there will be some form of stable withdrawal, and if we withdraw all at once, it's just going to create a power vacuum in which they're going to be sucked into some type of conflagration, because you know who's going to come looking for what? It's going to be Turkey probably from the north, Iraq from the east, and Saudi Arabia.
That's okay.
Up.
That was a pretty good. That was a pretty good Freudian slip there, Jim.
Sorry about that.
Saudi America.
Saudi America. That's it. Saudi America, coming up from the. I'm glad it's not lost on you, and coming up from the south. And let's face it, Bob. We have just got the tiger by the tail, and I would like to see us out of there tomorrow. but I just hope that there's one way that they, you know, this not might be the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning.
Well,
that's the only way you can look at it. We didn't get in there overnight, excuse me, and we're not going to be able to leave overnight, unfortunately. That's just.
But the problem, I understand we're not going to leave overnight. We can't get, one of the news stories that came out yesterday, I didn't even get to it in the show because, we have so many good conversations. One of the news stories that came out yesterday, there are almost as many mercenaries in Iraq now as there are American soldiers.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they're that well paid, then let them stay there and hew the wood and draw the water and earn their pay and take our boys home.
Sounds good to me.
These people will fight for anybody as long as you pay them enough, correct?
That's the way it is with a mercenary, I checked.
I mean, really, why not?
But, you know, they come across with this, you know, the now they don't directly point the finger at the Bush administration, although the finger must certainly be pointed. The Clinton administration was working hard on a Palestinian-Israeli solution,
mm-hmm.
and they never gave up. Do you remember when Bush first took office, Jim? How he said that? It's not so much what he said; it's what he didn't say. They completely ignored the Palestinian problem. For years.
They just let that take care of itself, and any efforts to ameliorate that condition wither and dry and just die on the vine. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah. They didn't point out that much of this is a function of the Bush administration's negligence. But, you know, at the same time, they get it right trying to develop some sort of diplomatic solution to the Palestinian-Israeli problem and the Palestinian-Arab or the Israeli-Arab problem. That's solid, but then they come back around and they say things like the most important questions about Iraq's future are now the responsibility of Iraqis.
Well,
I suppose there's an element of truth to that, Jim, but at some point, do we not have to acknowledge our degree and level of fault in this?
The only way we're going to do that is to get rid of the people who are in control of the administration, and that's the only way that's going to happen. It's just the same thing that happened after Joe Stalin died. Only in 1956, when Khrushchev on February 22nd of that year made his secret speech debunking Stalin and exposing his crimes. That's the same type of situation that's going to have to happen. It'll take time, unfortunately. Stalin died in 53, and Khrushchev made the speech in February of 56. So we'll apply the same axiom there. It'll come out.
Well,
it will take time. It will not come as quickly as you or I would like, but looking at it as a historical perspective, that's probably the lines that will follow. I may be wrong. It's just my humble opinion.
Well, we can't. I acknowledge, Jim, that we can't leave tomorrow.
No, we can't.
We could, however, start leaving tomorrow.
Well, we're talking about a phased withdrawal and a phased diminution of the number of troops. We certainly can't send any more troops over there, and somebody needs to put a foot in John McCain's mouth, because all he wants to do is send more and more troops, which is not the answer.
Well, apparently it's not just John McCain, because this was one of the more disturbing aspects. Now, I'm still in the executive summary.
Well, I mean, okay? In this report, they admit that this conflict is militarily not only unsustainable, but unwinnable.
But listen, I mean, this is straight from the report, Jim. The United States should significantly increase the number of U.S. military personnel, including combat troops, embedded in and supporting Iraqi army units.
Well, somebody's talking out both sides of their face, because I heard on CNN this morning that even Baker himself has said that the situation was so grave that it was untenable, that it was just absolutely unwinnable and non-sustainable.
And yet at the same time, they're sitting here saying, send more troops.
Well, I mean, you know, whatever happened to the thing, that you just can't continue to throw good money after bad.
Or good people after dead.
Well, I was just coming around to that. Treasure, blood and treasure. But anyway, I don't know. We'll just wait and see how it happens after January. But I did have a joke to tell you since it's prayer meeting night, and I hope you have time for it.
Go right ahead.
Well, you know, a lot of these fundamentalist churches don't believe in Halloween, so this other church decided, one of them, they were going to have a Come As Your Favorite Hymn party. And so they came dressed as their favorite hymn.
Now, that's him with an H-Y-M-N.
Exactly.
Okay, just and, clarifying.
Right. And so it was the pastor or the reverend's function to go amongst the congregation and guess who came as which hymn. And so the first person he encountered, obviously, was Sister Marie, who was completely naked. And he said, "My Lord," he said, "could this be just as I am?"
That's what I was thinking.
And then he went to Sister Olga, who had bright bulbs tied around her waist, and he said, "How clever. That must be Let the Lower Light Be Burning." And then he came to Brother John, and he had a thing of wheat tied around his waist. And he said, "Brother John, that's super. It must be Bringing in the Sheaves." He said, "Well, I don't know, Reverend, but I tell you, if that woman there don't put on her clothes, it's going to be coming through the rye."
Got to get a snare drum in here, Jim. All well, right. Well, I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I've heard you say more outrageous things. Well, I mean, I thought you've heard it. You must have heard it before. But anyway, nonetheless. What can I say about the 79-point report? That's it.
You know, I mean, imagine what poor Clemenceau and Lloyd George are thinking.
Yeah, well, the Lord himself only had 10.
Yeah, they made fun of Woodrow Wilson for 14. Bringing 14.
But I don't see how they can continue to. Do they reference how many more people they want to send in terms of manpower and where they're coming from?
Not that I have found yet. In the executive summary. It's there as plain as day. The United States should significantly increase the number of U.S. military personnel, including combat troops, embedded in and supporting Iraqi army units.
Well, what are they going to do? Revive the Volkssturm? You know,
it goes on and says, as these actions proceed, U.S. combat forces could begin to move out of Iraq. Now, that seems like having your cake and eating it too to me. But
they could. Well, what they're talking about is rotating people. That's what they're trying to do. I mean, you don't. If you're going to increase strength levels, you don't take people out as you put people in. You keep the current strength levels as what they are, and then you increase by adding further personnel, correct?
Well, that makes sense to me.
Well, this whole thing is clear as mud, and it's pretty ambiguous. And obviously, you know, they can't admit that this is a total failure. But even Baker, I mean, it was reported on CNN today, is saying that, you know, it was military unwinnable and the burden unsustainable. And I'm not sure what's going on here.
And you know, I know that part of this is, you know, we can't have recriminations. But it's winnable and unsustainable. And
unwinnable.
It was, and it was, yeah, unwinnable. It was never winnable, Jim. From the first shot, it wasn't winnable.
Well, they seem to think that it was, and they didn't listen to people like General Shinseki and people like that. And he, of course, was asked to retire early because he didn't go along with the party line. And it was deemed profitable for a lot of these neocons and the companies they represent for us to go in there. And they made gazillions of dollars off this war, and it's just been a milch cow for certain companies, as you well know, like Halliburton and stuff like that. And so now that they milked it dry, then I guess they figure now, well, we've gotten as much as we can out of this, and it's time for us to, particularly since our terms of office are coming up, get out and then try to write the CYA memos to try to say why we did what we did, which are just...
And hand this mess over to the next poor bastard who inhabits 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Please, God, let it be a Democrat.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I think the Republicans are rooting for a Democrat at this point.
Well, I would think so, because, I mean, like I say, we can't stay this, and he's going to be asking for another supplemental of I don't know how much money in addition to the regular appropriations that the military is going to get for the continuation of this fiasco. And, you know, what we're going to have to realize is this, and this is what I predict will happen to Iraq. Iraq will cease to be. As I said last week on your show, it ceased to be the very moment we went in there. And it's going to go into a third. Let Turkey have their third. Let Iran have their third. And if the Saudis want it, let them have their third.
Let them fight for it.
Well, just let them have it. Let them deal with it. And let us get out of there and say, look, we tried. And maybe they can establish some type of, with their own hegemony, that the Arabs, dealing with Arabs, they can get along with each other. I don't know. But at least to the average Iraqi, the only thing he wants to see is to see American uniforms leave that country, and they want to see their power come back on and their water being restored.
And their toilets start flushing.
Exactly.
And their little girls stop getting blown to bits.
Exactly. And whatever it means. I mean, you know, if our presence, our continued presence there ensures no electricity, no running water, and the continuation of death by the score every day. And that's the bottom line, in my opinion. And, you know, that's what's going to have to happen. We no longer represent any type of stabilizing force there. If anything, we are the irritant. And that we need to leave that part of the world and let it heal and let Iraq get...
And we can be no part of that healing process. This report assumes that we can. Jim, we can't.
Well, I don't see how we can. I don't really. This is just going to have, you know, we're going to have to let blame go where blame goes. And, you know, I still think that the people who are responsible for this ought to be held accountable in the strictest manner. And I have always supported that position. Of course, they'll never do it. But, I mean, I would hope for justice, and the very stones cry out for justice. And by being the headstones of cemeteries all over this country, and the headstones of all over Iraq, if they have the means to construct one, most times they're just mass graves or on shallow, unmarked graves. Because who has money to do anything like that when you can't sustain the living? So, I mean, you know, I realize I'm taking your time and running off in the mouth here, but
no, I think you're making valid points.
I just feel like this time has come for us to realize we made a mistake. Number one, you know, it's like being an alcoholic. The first step is to admit that you've got a problem and that you're doing something wrong, and then you go through a series of steps to correct that situation. Whether you have to go to rehab or whether you have to apologize to everybody you've wronged, and you're familiar with 12-step programs.
I know the 12 steps.
And basically, what I propose is what we need, as far as Iraq is concerned, is to realize that if we need to go through some type of 10 or 12-step program, that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
And if we can... fund efforts to help repair infrastructure, or at least just to repair what we have destroyed, so that they can have electricity, running water, flushing toilets, and that, you know, the bullets can cease in the streets and the IEDs will be put on the shelf. That's the best we can hope for.
And most of that is nothing that we can accomplish, Jim.
No, it isn't. That's what has to happen over there. I mean, because we really...
Well, by we, I mean our military, our air forces, our bomb droppers, missile shooters.
Well, I mean, it was more than... these guys do what they're told to do.
Well, sure. No. I'm not assigning blame. I'm saying that we cannot be part of the solution.
No.
We are, you know... It seems to be fundamental common sense to me, Jim. We can't be part of the solution because, in fact, we are the almost the entirety of the problem.
Well, we see the Iraqis, they realize that. And
they do, but we don't.
And the first thing they ask these American soldiers is this question. When will we have our electricity back? When will we have our running water back? When will our lives be able to get back to normal? When will we be able to go back to school and have some type of normal life that's free of death and destruction? And these American soldiers, unfortunately, do not represent a force which can bring about these positive changes. And it's only the absence of our troops. And that's all I can say, you know. That's the way I see it. And unfortunately, that's a war that should never have been fought. And you know why it was fought and by whom it was fought or who signed the order. And I think he ought to pay. I think he definitely needs to stand before some type of tribunal and answer for his crimes.
Well, it makes sense to me, Jim.
Well, it does to me, too. And, you know, if you do things like that, then you can't get away with them. And I honestly believe that this is a very seriously flawed individual. And I'm not going to go into some of the other stuff I've said, but in my opinion, this needs to be addressed as soon as, if any type of healing process is going to take place. Because if the rest of the world sees that we take action against the people who are responsible for this, that will itself help to begin a healing process.
Yeah, and restore some of our credibility. Jim, thank you very kindly.
All right.
Have a good evening.
Sorry I took so long.
Oh, don't apologize at all. It was all quite trenchant and quite valuable.
Well, sorry about the bad joke. I thought you ought to appreciate it.
No, I didn't. No. Just because it's a bad, just because it's a terrible pun doesn't mean it's not a good joke.
I'll see you. Bye.
All right. Bye now. All right. And let's move on. Don't get a call from him too terribly often, but it's always pleasant when we do. Our good friend Billy Shears is with us right now. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program. No, the button, honey, the button. There we go. Hey, Billy.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you just fine.
Okay, great. Listen, Jim's last portion of his call is a good segue into what I want to call about. But first, I want to ask you a question. I was listening to a guy today, and I heard a spot, I think it was with Rush and a caller named Mary. Did you put that together?
No, that's not my doing.
Oh, okay, because it was really a great spot and very powerful. I thought it sounded like something that you would have put together, but at any rate. But the reason I called, I have something I want your listeners to hear, and I want to kind of preface this first by saying it's about Sarge. You know, his
yeah.
One day last week, I think it was last week, he called with a very emotional, very passionate, very angry call, and it inspired me to put together a song featuring Sarge.
Okay,
mm-hmm. Listening. The song really is originally called Code Red. I renamed it, you know, Hey Sarge, we got to stop Bush. Okay, and it's about voices from the grave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, if you don't mind, I know Agnes has it.
Yeah, I think so. She's taking a call right now. Stand by just a second.
Okay. And also, I'll say, you know, at the end of the call, there's a cameo by one of your callers. I think you'll get a little chuckle out of it. Yeah. So,
okay. Great. Well, let's fire it up and let's run it.
Well, listen, I'm gonna head off. I'll listen to it, and I just want to say, hey, Sarge, I salute you, buddy.
Thanks, Billy. Thanks. Okay. Take care. And, well, I think that's all the setup that it needs. Agnes, roll it, please.
Yeah, this is Sarge. How you doing?
Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush. Gotta stop Bush. Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush. Gotta stop Bush. Remember those who have died by hand. Remember those in far off lands. The
9/11, you know, that was a moment of failure for them. You know, they ignored the intelligence that was, you know, being told to them, hey, you've got to do something. Something's going to happen, you know. And Ashcroft saying, I don't want to hear any more about it. And, you know, all of this. I mean, it just, you know, that day alone was, you know, just a day of their total incompetence.
With burned out eyes, their bodies ruined by Allied bombs. What part of Satan did this democracy come from? What part of Satan did this democracy come from? Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush, gotta stop Bush. Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush, gotta stop Bush.
You look at Katrina and you look at Iraq, you look at what they've done to the economy, you look at the NSA wiretapping, that ruling came down today. My God, what does it take? I mean, if these people cannot be impeached, then you might as well just take that out of the Constitution, because nobody can ever be impeached.
People say that you make your own bed. What goes around comes around and gets you in the end. If a great big bomb falls on your town, did you vote for the man to mow the Arabs down? It's time to wake up. Cold red, stop listening to what the president says. Stop living your life like you're spoon-fed, because it's sucking the brain right out of your head. Sucking the brain right out of your head. They're sucking the brain right out of your head. They're sucking the brain right out of your head. Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush, gotta stop Bush. Voices from the grave saying loud and clear, gotta stop Bush.
Yeah, I mean, they have committed so many crimes, and so many people have died and suffered from these rotten, filthy, stinking slime. And that's what they are, they're slime. And I mean, I have been down to Jackson County. I've seen what happened down there. I can imagine what it's like in Iraq. You know, and I just, good God almighty, what's it going to take? I mean, what's it going to have to do? They've stolen the treasury. They've made us the laughing stock of the world because Bush is such an imbecile. And we're still talking like we want to invade Iran. I'm hoping that I will get to testify, because there is so much that's going on here that people don't even know about. I mean, when a four-year-old girl tries to commit suicide because she's sitting there saying, my country has forgotten me, the world has forgotten me, so what the hell is there to live for? I mean, something's wrong, and if the people of the United States don't give a damn enough to stand up and say, I'm not going to take it anymore, then I worry about our nation, because that is not the nation I served. That is not the nation that I go through pain for every damn day of my life, and I am so damn mad.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Stirring stuff, huh? Very much so. Thanks, Billy. Beautiful work. You know, that's the amazing thing about the community that not just we've built, but that has built itself around this network and this show and all the shows on this network. Just commitment and caring one person for another. Can you ever hear that on right-wing radio? Of course not. Because they're detached. Right-wing radio doesn't exist to build community. Right-wing radio exists to advance agendas, agendi. No, agenda. That's plural, I'll bet you. But you get the idea. This is where it's happening. This is the future. Now, we've got to go to the top of the hour news. It's always good to find out what's going on and how the world is being mismanaged from minute to minute to minute to minute. But if you want to get involved in the program, if you want to get involved in the community, pick up the phone, 877-443-2366. You are always welcome. This is the Head On Radio Network, straight to the news. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Look around. Show me holy places not yet found. Let's disappear and we'll hide underground.
This is the Quality News Network. The Bipartisan Iraq Study Group released its report today. It concludes President Bush's Iraq policy is not working and the stay the course strategy is not viable. After more than 3.5 years of war and more than 2,900 American troops killed, the situation in Iraq was described as, quote, grave and deteriorating, end quote. The panel recommends U.S. combat troops be pulled out by early 2008. The panel also advises an increase in the number of U.S. troops embedded to train the Iraqis, thus shifting the military mission from a combat to a support role. The study also called for President Bush to work for peace in the Israeli-Palestinian arena. The president has done little during his White House career to address the issue. The report says a solution to the long-standing problem will do much to diffuse tensions in the region. President Bush does not have to follow any of the Iraq Study Group's recommendations. Today, the White House said the president would make his decisions on Iraq's strategy within weeks. In Iraq, 10 American troops were killed today in separate attacks. 5 of the troops were killed in the north, 5 in the Anbar province. In Baghdad, an attack on a Shia marketplace killed at least 8 people. 40 were wounded. 45 bodies were found scattered throughout the city. On Capitol Hill, Senate floor debate on Defense Secretary nominee Robert Gates has started. The full Senate confirmation vote may happen as early as today. In London, Scotland Yard says the radiation poisoning death of Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko was murder. He died 2 weeks ago at a London hospital, blaming Russian President Vladimir Putin. The radioactive polonium-210 has been traced to a specific Russian nuclear facility. In Milwaukee, an explosion at an industrial complex thought to have been started by propane killed 3 and injured 37. The blast was so powerful, witnesses felt it 1.5 miles away. In southern Oregon, the California father missing in a snowy rural area for more than a week was found dead today in a canyon. His wife and 2 children were found alive in their broken-down SUV. The man, a website editor, left his family to find help. A federal report says FEMA wasted more than $40 million through fraud and mismanagement during the Hurricane Katrina recovery effort. The GAO says FEMA also lost computers, boats, and other equipment. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
NASA's Global Surveyor spacecraft has taken images of what indicates the presence of water on the surface of Mars. Scientists are excited about the discovery the red planet may have at one time harbored life. At Cape Canaveral, bad weather has led NASA to downgrade the possibility of a nighttime launch of the space shuttle Discovery tomorrow. Jamba Juice is warning customers in Nevada, Arizona, and Southern California that strawberries used for smoothies may be contaminated by Listerium, a potentially deadly bacteria. Taco Bell nationwide has removed green onions from its menus. Tests show the onions may have been responsible for the recent outbreak of E. coli, which has sickened dozens of customers in three states. According to a company that filters junk email, spam has become worse worldwide over the past 6 months. Unsolicited email now comprises 9 out of every 10 emails. U.S. mortgage applications were up sharply this week, more than 8%. The increase was spurred by a surge in home refinancing loans. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.19 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 31 points at 12,301. The NASDAQ down 9 at 2443. The S&P 500 down 2 at 1412. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, 5 minutes, coming up on 6 after the hour. I don't necessarily dictate that it be this way, but I would guess that the bulk of the program will be taken up with the Iraq Study Group report, although there are other stories out there. Not the most inspiring vision of the future Democratic leadership of the Senate took today, as we sort of bowed down and knuckled under and confirmed Robert Gates. At a dead run, I would suggest, too, in an awful big hurry. Now, why we couldn't wait until there was time for honest, sober reflection on the nomination of this old Cold Warrior and this unreconstructed supporter of the Iran-Contra affair and key player therein, I don't know. I'm not hollering for a filibuster or anything, but I would sincerely like to know why it had to happen as quickly as it did. Armed Services Committee hearing, gone. Boom. Unanimous vote. Not one single Democrat on the Armed Services Committee voting against Robert Gates. Now, you've done the reading on Robert Gates. I've done the reading on Robert Gates. Robert Perry over at ConsortiumNews.com has put out a tremendous amount of a reportage regarding the history of this man. But Lord God, and I realize that John Warner from Virginia is a worn-out old Republican war horse, but, I thought something embarrassing was going to happen on the floor of the Senate today when he was singing Robert Gates' praises. Oh, he'll be honest, and oh, he'll speak his mind. And he'll tell the president what the president needs to... Horse hockey. We are dealing here with a hydra. You know, everybody, we all giggled in glee the day that Rummy was gone. Oh, we got rid of Rummy. Well, you get rid of Rummy and you get another one who is as bad or worse than Rummy. I suspect that Robert Gates will be slightly less entertaining than Rummy, if you can describe Rummy as being entertaining. But this was a guy who was literally butt deep in the Iran-Contra affair at the same time that John Negroponte had the death squads wandering the streets and trails and jungle and into the jungle villages of El Salvador, taking people out by the still of the night, slaughtering priests and nuns and peasants. Robert Gates, unless I am mistaken, actually advocated the bombing of Nicaragua during the so-called Contra War.
the bombing of Nicaragua. Let's go to the phones. We are joined by our good friend Sarge. Sarge, you're becoming a celebrity, buddy.
I heard that. That's some awesome work. But Billy, if you're listening, thank you. That was really nice. I'm impressed.
It is impressive.
He did a good job. I definitely want a copy of it.
But you didn't call to bask in the warm glow of your celebrity.
No, and I would hardly call it that. what I did want to tell you before I got started on the Iraq study, was you remember our good buddy Jim Yancey?
Yes, very much so.
On Friday morning, he is going to be a guest on the Dr. Mike Newcomb show on Nova M.
Wonderful.
And, you know, he's...
The more people that hear Jim talk about what Jim is up against and what the folks are up against down there, the better off I hope it will be.
Well, he's great, and he's one of the really true heroes. Now, you want to write a song, there's a guy to write a song about, because he has given all he has, and he continues to give on a daily basis. And he has become one of my heroes, because I really appreciate his hard work, and I don't like how he's getting treated. You know, he's not getting the grant money that he needs to get to do the important work that he's doing. He's done so much for the community, and yet he's not getting the support, and they're wasting the money sending it to people who won't do even one-eighth of the work that this man does. It's a shame.
Well, and I think the thing that adds the most to the Jim's credibility is the fact that he, honest to God, knows what's going on, and he knows what is needed there, and he knows what is needed there by virtue of what he doesn't have.
Right. He's a long-time resident, you know.
Yeah.
He really tries to be a good citizen, and he doesn't even let the political aspects of things get in the way. He doesn't. You won't hardly ever hear him get too involved on the political part. He's more concerned, as I am, although I'm probably more political than he is, but he's more concerned about getting the people back on their feet, and that's the important thing, at least to me.
Well, yeah, and to everybody who's paying attention to this situation. I don't know if you heard the top of the hour news story or not.
Yeah.
But, I mean, did you hear it?
Yeah, I did. I
pretty disgusting.
Yeah, and that sort of thing just comes up to hurt, because every time they put out some kind of BS like that, what always comes about is it just makes it harder to get things done. And what they're talking about is FEMA screwing up. It's not the people, for God's sake. It's not the people. The people are in hell.
Yeah.
And if these damn news agencies, oh, I'm getting pissed. But if these news agencies would stop and think, every time they put out that kind of garbage, it always comes back to hurt the little guy and the guy who's just barely making it by.
Bear in mind, the information that's being put out there by the news organizations is being put out there because there is a pre-existing news release that has been put out, usually by FEMA or some other arm of the federal government, the Homeland Security. There's an army of people out there putting that crap out for news organizations to pick up on a daily basis.
Well, you know, every time that it looks like we're starting to get a little heads up and a little bit of attention, they put out some kind of trash like that. Because it seems like just, you know, I've been on Nova M a few times and several shows there, and people are starting to pay attention. And when, like I told you one day, when the president of Iran said, hey, you need to take care of your people down there in the Katrina area, you know, and he's right.
Yeah.
And that's what really ought to make every American just mad as hell. Because when the Iranian president or prime minister, whatever he is, when he comes out and he says something and he doesn't have to even lie about it, and it can be negative like that, that ought to tell Americans, hey, y'all are a bunch of jerks. Because every day we let this SOB stay in that office, we are just proving how much we don't care. And I'm hoping we're just going to get rid of this. I can't stand it. Because there's too many people have died. It's like I was, like Guy James and I were talking in the chat. If I were to meet him, I would not shake his hand. I would probably spit in his face and go to jail. But there's no way I would shake that SOB's hand. And his mother, oh, gosh.
The beast.
I'm just really, really disgusted with it. And I'm hoping maybe that our Democrats will hear the people, because there's enough voices down here alone that I can turn them on to, that they don't want to put up with the pain and suffering that these people are. It's really, really horrible.
Well, I'm looking toward January, Sarge. That's where the proof will be in the pudding. I was not impressed by the way that the Senate Democrats dealt with Robert Gates.
I think that was bad.
And it didn't inspire me. And, you know, granted, the Senate's job is not to inspire Bob Kincaid, but we're looking for spine and we're looking for fight back. And but, you know, bear in mind, the media is out there saying, you know, well, you know, now the Democrats have won, they've got to be bipartisan. Never mind the fact that the Republicans, through the entirety of their majority, were not bipartisan for a millisecond. It was pure partisan politics.
Yeah, all the way.
And, you know, no, we can't advance any sort of a progressive agenda that would actually ease the sorrows and the burdens and take away from the manifest hell of suffering humanity in this country. We've got to be bipartisan. You know, I guess that means and I'll wait and see. I'm going to be generous about this. I'll wait and see, Sarge. But when the minimum wage bill comes up, if this thing is talking about making it $7 an hour sometime 2 years from now, I'm going to call BS on that in a big old hurry.
Yeah, I have been told that there's going to be investigations into Katrina. And you know what? There damn sure better be. There had better be, because I honestly don't see the people continuing to put up with the crap that's going on and not revolting. I really believe, I know there's an underground movement already started on the coast, on the Mississippi coast, and I think it goes into Louisiana as well, but there are people already starting to get together and starting to say, we don't care whether it's Democrats or Republicans, we're fixing to revolt. We're tired of it because we're getting shafted by everybody. And when you have your citizens feeling like that, you are inspiring the problem.
Yeah.
That's how these third and fourth world nations come into being, because they neglect the people and the people revolt and it turns into just all kinds of anarchy and stuff of this nature. That's what happened in Nicaragua. That's what happened in Haiti and every place else. When you start forgetting the masses will have to do something.
And when you get to a point where your infrastructure is broken, where you can't provide services, you know, there are places, and you know this better than I do, there are places along the Gulf Coast that have more in common with Baghdad than they have with anywhere else in the United States.
That's right. They do. And I have been down there. I know. And I want to go back down there again as soon as I can get enough funds up to make another trip with Ray. Of course, he's having his own personal problems, which just adds to get down there. But I do want to go down there, and I'm hoping that Nancy Pelosi's office and that Representative Clyburn's office are telling me the truth, that they're really, really going to look into this thing. And I hope they do subpoena me. I hope they subpoena Jim Yancey and some of the others. But if this, it's like I said in that part that Billy picked out, if you cannot impeach these SOBs,
who can you?
Take it out. We don't have such thing anymore. Impeachment is off the table forever, because you cannot get any worse than what has happened in the last 6 years. You have seen complete and utter failure and treason by this group of thugs, and why in the hell they can't be impeached shows that these representatives, these congressmen, could care less about the Constitution. And therefore, our nation's gone to hell right there. Because that is the foundation of our democracy.
Well, you know, there's some of this that has an aspect of wait and see to it, and I don't care much for wait and see. I'm really, really, really jealous about the Constitution, about seeing the Constitution followed and obeyed. But the fact is, you know, if this Congress comes in and, for instance, starts cutting funding for the butchery in Iraq, Dick Cheney has already said that he will, not may, but will, see to it that they continue to fund the Iraq war, whether Congress likes it or not. Well, that will force a constitutional crisis, Sarge.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, you've got something similar to what was going on with Iran-Contra, and you also have what are very clearly impeachable offenses.
Yeah, and why they don't, I don't understand. But, okay, now here's something I asked Guy James about today, and in that report, the Iraqi study report, they mentioned about the permanent bases in it.
Mm-hmm.
They want to move our troops, or suggest moving our troops into these bases and training the Iraqi forces and letting them handle it and just be there to oversee, monitor, support. And what's going to happen is it's not going to work.
Well, see, and I think there's a whole bunch of CYA in this report, as far as I can tell, reading it, Sarge. Here's a section of it. Significant questions remain about the ethnic composition and loyalties of some Iraqi units, specifically whether they will carry out missions on behalf of national goals instead of sectarian agenda. Of Iraq's 10 planned divisions, those that are even numbered are made up of Iraqis who signed up to serve in a specific area, and they've been reluctant to redeploy to other areas of the country. As a result, elements of the army have refused to carry out missions. The Iraqi army is also confronted by several other significant challenges. These are significant. Units lack leadership. They lack the ability to work together and perform at higher levels of organization, the brigade and division level. Leadership training and the experience of leadership are the essential elements to improve performance. And this one, units lack equipment. They can't carry out their missions without adequate equipment. Congress has been generous in funding requests for U.S. troops, but it has resisted fully funding Iraqi forces. Units lack personnel. Units lack logistics and support. The state of the Iraqi police is substantially worse than that of the Iraqi army. Substantially worse than that of the Iraqi army. You can't, when it's that broken, I mean, this is past Humpty Dumpty. This is shattered beyond all recognition. I mean, this is FUBAR in all capital letters.
Yeah, well, you know, they say that we didn't send enough troops in at the beginning, and I have been guilty of saying that. But I heard Mike Malloy say it, and he made me wake up and think, you know, this is the truth.
Look, Sergeant,
we sent too many people in.
We never sent one. Right, never the first one. If you had sent 2 million soldiers in, it would not have stopped what is going on now, because it is the presence of us, either as one person or 2 million people, that is the problem in itself.
Yeah,
and the failure to recognize that is what has created this nightmare.
If we sent one soldier in there, we sent one too many. We never should have been there in the first place. We had no business there. We have no business there now. And what in the world we're going to do to get out of it is going to prove to be one of the most costly things this country will have ever experienced.
Well, and the thing is, we've spent a lot of money breaking Iraq. We haven't even begun to pay for putting it back together.
That's right.
Well, Sarge, I appreciate it. You have yourself a good evening.
Thank you, and I hope everybody will tune in and listen to Jim, because I really like what the man says.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Is that tomorrow?
Friday.
Okay, yeah, tomorrow's Thursday. Sorry, I get a little bit lost. All right, thanks, Sarge. Have a good evening. And on to our good friend Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Susan, welcome to the program. Sorry you had to wait so long.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, you?
Well,
I mean, you know,
I'm kind of confused.
That's kind of a throwaway phrase. I'm doing okay. You know, I'm breathing out and breathing in again. You know, beyond that,
it's partly cloudy. I'm really confused. First of all, on the Iraq study thing,
mm-hmm.
why we're listening to these people?
Well, I'm not, and I don't think you are you asking what it is that makes these people have credibility?
Yeah, well, you know, because to me they're nothing but a bunch of
what? Well, no. Your question is well put, Susan. What in God's name does Edwin Meese III know about Iraq? Next to nothing.
Yeah,
and the same applies to Sandra Day O'Connor.
The last time I heard anything about Edwin Meese III, he was wrapped up in Watergate.
Iran-Contra.
Yeah, okay, Iran-Contra.
Yeah, that's Reagan. That's Well, you know, that's Reagan's attorney general who spent the biggest part of his time in office trying to eliminate Playboy,
yeah.
If I recall correctly.
Or was it Hustler?
Well, them two.
Yeah.
You know, dirty naked pictures.
Yeah. Then I noticed, although I have not, you know, just from what you said, it's a classic piece of doublespeak. First comes the headline, Iraq study group says we need to get out of Iraq, da-da-da-da-da. But if you go back and read it, it says we need to go in more.
It couldn't be any more. I wasn't making it up. I read it. It says more troops.
I know. But what they're basically saying is when you get down to the nitty-gritty is George Bush was right. We need to do what he said. Horse bucky.
Yeah.
Choke the money off. Give them just enough money to pay for the cargo planes and the explosives to blow up their equipment to get their little butts home, and to hell with it. Because if you remember the scenes from Vietnam, we had a phased withdrawal from there, and chaos hit anyway.
Sure.
So no matter how we're going to do it, it's going to still go into the crapper. So
we're going to leave. We're going to leave sooner or we're going to leave later. The outcome is going to be the same after we leave.
Yeah, it's still going to go into chaos. So let's do it now. Cut the money cap off.
I agree. Period.
Stop it. Give them just enough money to pay for the airplanes to get out of the country.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, that little warning we talked about last week on the program from the policy wonk analyst from the Saudis. I couldn't, and you know, well, you know, if the United States leaves, we'll just have to go in and fight to protect the Sunnis because we're Sunnis too, and we'll stop the Shiites who are supported by Iran. You know, if Iran and Saudi Arabia want to have a war,
let them.
Now that's gonna. Now you do understand. I mean, that's a rather facile statement to say, let them, because that means that gasoline here is going to go to $10, $12, $15, $20 a gallon.
Do you have what makes you think it's not going to go to $10, $20 dollars a gallon anyway?
Well, eventually it will. Yeah, you know, the closer it comes to running out, but. You know, can we make? I know this is equally simplistic, but if we were forced to it, could we learn to make lemonade out of lemons? If we didn't have gas, you know, the last time the Arabs cut the gas off, we didn't have the common good sense to really, really get serious about fuel conservation. Granted, that's, you know, after the Arab oil embargoes of the 70s, that's when we started getting the Ford Pinto and the Ford and the Chevrolet Vega.
Uh huh.
It didn't stick, yeah. And we didn't take it to its next. We didn't go to the next step with it.
Okay, now we need to have it brought home as personally as a punch in the nose. In other words, as far as I'm concerned, and it would hurt me. I'm one of the people it would really, really hurt because my income is just really bad.
Well, and where I sit right now, Susan. I'm 30 miles from everywhere.
Yeah, so are we.
It's a gallon of gas to the grocery store and back.
We are 30 miles from everywhere, and we live on $1,200 a month in a very expensive part of the country. And it's fun, but I would be willing to to say, let it go, let the price go, because that's the only way that this country is going to become self-sufficient. And that's the only way we're going to stop that rat hole in Iraq from sucking more and more and more and more lives, money, everything else down the tube. Get out. Get out now. I don't care what this.
Get out, get out, get out, get out, get out, yep. Leave, be gone, let not the door, darken not the door, don't let the door hit you on the way out, stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once.
Yeah, and if the, you know, and if the Saudis and the Iranians want to have a war, well, that's their problem.
And I'm
enough corn, enough wheat, enough everything to convert into
biomass,
biofuel, to provide this country with fuel, and you don't have to change.
Well, and here's the other side, little side consideration, Susan. The Iranians, and I'm not going to get into a good, bad, or into, you know, I feel bad for young Iranians. They can't go to YouTube now.
Yeah.
They can't read the New York Times, I guess Google got shut down, and I hate that. I really, really deplore and loathe, you know, any government that fears information has more than a smattering of illegitimacy about it, and I apply that to this government or any other. You know, there was a survey released a couple of weeks ago. We're 54th.
Mm-hmm.
We're 54th on the list of the freedom for freedom of the press. 54th out of 128.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing for us.
That's bad.
We jail journalists like Josh Wolf.
Yes.
We send anthrax to the right wing freaks send anthrax to news anchors.
Yeah.
Goobers and Gomers send fake anthrax to the likes of Keith Olbermann, you know, just to try to scare them into not telling the truth anymore.
Yeah.
So I deplore anything that impedes the free exchange of information.
The Canadians come up with a way to get around that, though.
Well, but what I'm getting at here is the Iranians have problems of their own. They have one of the reasons they want a nuclear program is because no matter how much oil they pump, they have profound financial problems, some of which stem from the fact that we've got a bunch of Iranian money gathering interest, being paid interest, tied up in frozen bank accounts that have been frozen since they took over the embassy.
Yeah.
Okay. That being the case, the reason they want to do nuclear energy is so that they can get more value out of selling more oil. You know, so consequently, I don't think the saber rattling. I don't think the Iranians or the Saudis really want to go in and use Iraq for a proxy fight, because it could make heads roll in the Saudi royal family, and it could collapse the Iranian government.
Exactly. They don't want any part of that. What they would, I think what they would really prefer to do is to remain in chaos, sucking out their malcontents and so on and so forth.
And keeping Iraqi oil off the market.
Exactly. Now, I do have one other thing to say before I let you go.
Okay.
It's a message for Billy. Billy, you need to get hold of Kathy Malloy and get that cut to her. And you also need to send it to every liberal talk show host you can find. It was great.
It was beautiful. And it was moving.
Yes, it was. And that he really needs to send it to everybody and their mother.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll also... I'll send it along to John Fox and ask him if he will please post it up on the website so folks can get it who want it.
Yeah, that would be cool, because I would really love to have a copy of that.
All right, then. Susan, you take care.
You too, and have yourself a nice prayer meeting, and enjoy.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. You wonder, you know, she was profound and she was earnest and candid when she said she would be more than happy to sacrifice to see America, on her own part and her family's part, to see America become energy independent. And I would hazard a guess that most of you are echoing her sentiments. How many corporate executives do you think would be willing to sacrifice like average Americans? I'm guessing you could probably count them on one hand and have room left over to operate chopsticks. And back to the phones. I haven't heard from her for a while. Our good friend CB calling in. CB, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. I've been out gardening today, and I just...
In December.
There was snow here for like 2 weeks, and now it's springtime.
Well, if I'd known we were going to get the winter we're getting here, I'd had a turnip patch in at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Fresh turnip greens in January, you can't beat.
Well, so I just tuned in right at the end of the Sarge song.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool, but I didn't get to hear the whole thing, so I'm going to wait for, you know, rebroadcast or something. But I would like to express my solidarity with Sarge. And I would like to express my solidarity with the guests. No matter how much the gas costs, no matter how bad it hurts, we got to stop this. And Al Gore would probably risk getting assassinated if we all stood behind him and started hollering.
Are you leaning toward Al, you think, in 08?
You just got to keep watching the stuff that's coming on the media about him. He's beating the drums of energy independence and, you know, to turn back global warming really hard. He's coming up with all kinds of fabulous ideas. I'm almost in tears every time I hear and see it. It's like, if that guy had been allowed to be president when we elected him, this would be such a much better world.
Right? Well, we could spend the rest of the program, CB, going over the crap we wouldn't be in right now.
Exactly. And I don't want to do that. The only reason I called was because you asked the question about, you know, how come Gates got confirmed so fast.
Okay.
And I'm calling to say, obviously, a deal has been made. I've had a theory going since sometime in September, whenever Foley got outed. You know, that crystallized it for me. The old guard, Poppy Bush's crowd, got fed up. They hit the wall. Because back then, you know, we were all of us freaking out about going to nuke Iran.
Mm-hmm.
It had started to cool down for a little while, and then it's still an option. And I really think the old boys from the Iran-Contra stuff, from all the dirty dealings of the past, got together and said, you know, these PNAC idiots have gone too far. Sorry, Poppy, but your kids are idiots, and we're not taking it anymore. And I really think that they were the ones who did that spectacularly splendid outing of all the dirty laundry so that the country could see what jerks these were. And I think, in fact, that the rigged vote was unrigged by these guys. And, you know, wherever the rigging might have worked, the candidates just got told, you didn't win. Sit down and shut up. I think they made a deal with the Democrats and said, look, we'll let you get elected. We'll let you take back over. You know, let us try and clean up this mess and go back to our former underhanded dirty dealing without, you know, completely obliterating America's standing in the world. We'll let you guys try and rehabilitate us. That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Well, now, of course, there's a, you know, if you think about it in terms of a Venn diagram or something, there's a convergence of PNACers and old Bush family, you know, old guard. Remember, Dick Cheney was selected by Old Man Bush to head the committee to find a running mate for George W.
Right, but I think that's why Poppy was breaking down the other day. That,
you know, that and being loaded.
Well, yeah, I don't think he was really so loaded. You know, old men, sorry, all you old guys out there, but old men get kind of weepy about things and sentimental. You know, their tears come to their eyes much more frequently than ever before, and I think he spent his life in service to his friends and compatriots, the plutocrats out there who have been messing with humans all over the globe for a really long time.
He has been loyal, and he has been a team player.
Exactly. And I do believe that as much as he loves certain of his sons anyway, that his ultimate loyalty lies with that group. And he's crying now because they have dishonored him badly. And, I mean, maybe it's because I grew up around fabulously wealthy people, but I happen to know, I mean, fabulously wealthy people who did not get their money in nice ways. Most of them didn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really so much like you and me. They don't let themselves realize the horrors that they've put the world through in order to get that kind of money. It just, you know, if you turn them around and make them stare it down, they'll see it and they'll, you know, get a lump in their throat and they'll feel badly, but, you know, they'll turn right back around and go back into being an innocent human who's not to blame for anything. And
well, you remind me of Andrew Carnegie, who after creating no small amount of misery on planet Earth, spent his elder years running around endowing libraries.
Right, right. They want to be seen as good people. they do have philanthropic ideas, even though they've gone out and murdered, you know, how many brown people.
But we had to.
Yeah, but we had to, right. You know, it's human beings are psychopaths, all of us. You know, we have this split personality. We have this little computational brain that we don't realize is under the control of our ego. Our vision is not global. It's narrowed, but we see things through the lens of our ego. And so, you know, and a lot of my friends give me, I can't say it, Agnes, look at me.
Hell. They give you hell, C.D.
Yeah, thank you. A lot
Grief.
Of my friends give me hell for this outlook, but I know these people in a weird sense, and I really think that that's what's going on. They don't like our loss of standing in the world. They don't like that we no longer have the moral high ground, and they want it restored. They operated beautifully under it for so long.
Well, you remind me of the fact that the richest of the rich got even richer under Bill Clinton's nefarious tax increases on the rich. You know, the right wing screamed about them for 8 years, but they just kept getting richer and richer and richer and richer, and they were able to get richer because the middle and lower classes were moving upward as well, which provided more, you know, more income for them to tap.
Absolutely, absolutely, and they're not as stupid. And as, you know, one-track-minded as we accuse them of being. You know, a lot of people out there, especially in my tinfoil hat community, think that these guys are just hell-bent to ruin everything. Well, I think that's probably true of the neocons, but not the old guard. They don't want that. They want legacies You know.
Well, they've spent in some cases 2 and 3 centuries making legacies, and their wives are members of the Daughters of the Mayflower, and it's all about tracing genealogies, and it's an absolute fact that, you know, Barbara, the old beast Bush, she was Barbara Pierce before H.W. married her, and a direct relation, as I mentioned last night, of Franklin Pierce, the President of the United States, and they claim descent from the royal houses of England.
And as a consequence of that, they feel like they've got something to live up to. I can understand your thesis. On the other hand, I'm not going to back down from my thesis that the neocon, the PNACers or whatever, are the pretty much dumbass street thugs.
No, that's pretty much my position too. So I think, you know, whatever standing Cheney and Rumsfeld used to have is gone, and you know, Jebby's part of PNAC too, and I really think that the word is out. These PNAC guys have got to be squashed or turned. And this is really going to sound wacko, but I think Poppy's hoping he can get his kids down to Paraguay before somebody kills them.
Well, while we've got the foil out, CB.
Yeah, mine's always out, and I have, you know.
Well, I want to pull out another square yard or so.
Okay.
You mentioned the Paraguay option. I'm still not convinced that HW, you know, he knows at this point he may not live to see it, but this thing that dawned on me in the dark and still of the night one evening, where you, and I call it the Carter Plan. You know, the Republicans ran Gerald Ford in 1976, but they didn't run him very hard. And so it was Jimmy Carter who took over in 1976, who provided, if you will, a cushion, a forgetting space,
yep,
for the Nixon administration.
Yep.
And not just the Nixon administration, the Republican Party in particular and in general as well.
Yep.
So 1980 comes along. Jimmy Carter has managed to actually, and you know, we forget these things. He's managed to actually keep the hostages alive in Iran, when it would have been just as easy to, for the Iranian students to take him out and start lopping heads. He's kept him alive, but he gets punished for it by being thrown out of office. I see that scenario being repeated in 2008. I see John, you know, the Bush family would love nothing more than to screw John McCain just one last time. And do it really good on a national stage and embarrass and humiliate him and destroy him once and for all, because they loathe John McCain. So you get McCain the nomination for the Republican nomination, and you run him against any Democrat who can come out of the fight, and that Democrat wins. That opens up the 2012 election for Jebby.
I don't think Jebby has a chance anymore. I think that's probably part of why Poppy. Ryan. I really don't think he was drunk. I went and looked at the video. I mean, I agree that from the sound of it, it sounded like he was drunk, but he didn't look drunk, you know, on the video of him. I saw that on Crooks and Liars today. Or he may have been a little liquored up, you know, but I don't think it was the Foster Brooks act.
That's where you and I guess differ a little bit. I don't think the Bush family ever gives up on an opportunity to have power again and more of it.
Well, certainly not without crying their eyes out.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Well, I do know why. Because I don't think Poppy Bush is the lead bad guy. I think he's, you know, he's been the figurehead bad guy, the guy who executes the plan in a whole lot of instances. But he's not. It's not like he's emperor of the secret government, the plutocracy, the guys who are really running things. I don't think he's the head of that. You know, he might be a figurehead of that, but I don't think he really runs it. And it's probably more along the lines of a committee, a communist kind of thing, you know, and it has been decided that this course is completely unacceptable, you know, that they've just gone entirely too far, torturing the Geneva Conventions down the tubes, all that other, everything that represented our moral high ground is just been decimated by these idiots.
Well, if after we're done, CB, we're gonna play the Tony Snow audio.
Yeah.
And I think Tony Snow makes it abundantly clear that George W. has no intention whatsoever of implementing the Iraq Study Group report as they said it must be implemented in order to succeed if success is to be had.
Which is why I think Poppy is scared. He's scared his son's going to get killed. You know, I was saying that, you know, during the election, run up to the election, that, you know, if Roe didn't stop fighting the old boys, he was going to find himself dead. I think, you know, I could see Roe fucking it, fighting it there for a while. And, you know, and he finally had to give up. And I think that if Bush keeps up with his, you know, I'm going to pull this out, you know, he digs his heels in, I'm the president, I'm the decider.
There it is.
Yeah. If he digs his heels in now with all this pressure being brought to bear on him, he's history.
Well, something better than 60% of the American people now believe the Iraq War was a mistake. Now, it's a far cry from believe it was a mistake to time to get the hell out.
Yeah, see, I'm definitely from another planet. I can't believe that there's a one of us left that believes that was the righteous thing to do. It was just so wrong.
Well, I'm not advocating you listen to right-wing radio, but, you know, it's clear that you haven't, and God bless you for not.
I can't. I can't.
I know.
I'm like Malloy, too. I can't watch W. I can listen to the sound bites from him if I'm listening to Malloy or somebody, you know, if I'm with somebody of
right, life. But otherwise it makes it feel like your brains are bleeding out through your ears.
Yeah.
No, I understand that. But yeah, there are still people who I was out driving around the day before yesterday, and I heard the argument put forward. Oh yeah, it was Flush. Who said, you people who say you support the troops, well, you don't really, because if you can't support the mission, you can't support the troops. So,
and then we all start screaming in unison, what mission?
I know. But the thing is, there is, what did Rumsfeld call them, 10%ers or whatever? We've got 30%ers in this country, CB, or 29%ers.
It's very, very, very.
Who won't ask that question, what is the mission?
Somewhere recently I made a comment on some blog that we're not just sheeple. We're not even sheep, we're mechanical sheep. You know, we don't need to be even herded anymore.
We're something out of a Philip K. Dick novel. We're the, you know, do robots dream of electric sheep?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of people just catch a whiff of how they're supposed to think and automatically go that way without anybody whipping them or talking at them about it. You know, they just go, oh, okay, we're supposed to act like Nazis now, so we're going to demand everybody's ID, or, you know, you want to go get a loaf of bread? Okay, show your papers, kind of thing. You know, honestly, it's that bad.
You do not have the appropriate papers for Wunderbread.
You
may not have the Wunderbread today.
Really, really. In my brain there, I can see and I believe that there is 30% out there who are hardliners and are going to go with this.
And the sad thing is it's still affecting family, CB, because my conversation with our new good friend Charlie Sullivan last night, he was talking about the conversations he will not be able to have at Christmas dinner.
Right.
You know, because he's got a right-wing authoritarian sister who thinks that, you know, and God, it's, I mean, you wander the blogs. I don't know if you see any of the right-wing ones or not, but yeah, it's still out there. Why won't they say the good things that are going on in Iraq?
No, I have my own personal right-wing nitwit who emails me stuff, so I can keep up with it that way.
Oh, well, then you're in the trenches.
I'm in the trenches, but, you know, Charlie, last night, I was listening to most of that. I tuned in late on that one, too. He seems like a pretty cool guy, and I mean no disrespect by this. I mean to say that maybe right before Christmas dinner, he gets himself a testosterone patch so that he's got extra juice for it. when his sister starts in on that stuff.
Yeah, well, see, and I think that's the other thing. If they start it,
exactly,
we get to finish it.
Exactly. That, you know, I know that family harmony is a wonderful thing, but there are hundreds of thousands of people dying. So,
yeah,
it's time to get out, you know, bring out the big guns, so to speak, and, you know, just get florid about it. Even when family harmony is at stake.
Well, you know, and we can be really simple about it, CB. It has to end. We must leave.
No two ways about it.
You know, I mean, you probably saw and heard and read the arguments about the Democrats, liberals, progressives' inability to do what the Republicans do, and that is reduce our philosophy and our politics to a bumper sticker.
Right.
Leave Iraq now.
Yeah. Or just
we've got the bumper sticker
now. Yeah.
Get out now. Leave Iraq now.
Yeah. I kind of like out now better, because that leaves it open to more things like W out now. Asterisk out now. Afghanistan and Iraq out. Get the flock out.
Well done.
Yeah.
Close, but well done. Flock. We'll remember that. Well, CB, thank you so much. Good to hear from you.
You're welcome. And, good to hear you, too.
All right, you
so
take care.
So, I got you all set straight now?
I'm all squared up.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. So, it's a deal in the dark by the, who would ever imagined that the George H.W. Bush cabal could be deemed the more reasonable and more centrist? Although, you know, I saw one of those little stupid online surveys the other day. In fact, it was right below the video of George H.W. blubbering in Florida. And it said, do you have a positive or a negative impression of George H.W. Bush? I, of course, went click negative. And then it shows you the results, and it was 75% positive. It goes to show you that when you put George W. Bush up against just about anybody, you get a positive outcome. He's like the ultimate negative multiplier. Or double... you know me, I don't do math. But consider, if you will, and again, a little bit more from the Iraq Study Group report, this from page 25. Oh, God, we'll be all night getting through this thing. Under the heading, U.S.-led reconstruction efforts. The United States has appropriated... Now, first of all, the thing you've got to do is stop and think, how much money have we spent on the Iraq War so far, and how much more do they want? The United States has appropriated a total of about $34 billion to support the reconstruction of Iraq, of which about $21 billion has been appropriated for the Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund. Nearly $16 billion has been spent. So we're 34 minus 16, and that's $18 billion. Almost all the funds have been committed. The administration requested $1.6 billion for reconstruction in fiscal year 2006 and received $1.485 billion. The administration requested $750 million for fiscal year 2007. The trend line for economic assistance in fiscal year 2008 also appears downward. Congress has little appetite for appropriating more funds for reconstruction. Stop there. Let's see, what numbers appear? $34 billion, $21 billion, $16 billion, $1.485 billion, $1.6 billion, $750 million. You know, I read through this earlier today, and I couldn't find anything in this. You know, you get phrases like the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, you know, the guy that lost his job, got thrown out. Here's a laurel and hearty handshake. Says that he's documented numerous instances of waste and abuse. All right. Okay. I'm all right. But that's, you know, okay. But that's where that segment ends. So we end with $21 billion been appropriated. Most of it's been committed. Not a word about the $9 billion
that fell into the cracks of the Coalition Provisional Authority, SOFA. So again, if you cannot deal honestly, if this study group cannot deal honestly with the problems, how do we ever suspect that they will honestly deal with the overarching problem? You get my meaning? I think so. So it's time for the news. If you want to get involved in the program, 877-443-2366 is the number. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. We're so sorry if we caused you any pain. We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. But there's no one left at home, and I believe I'm gonna wait. So sorry, but we haven't heard a thing all day. We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. But if anything should happen, we'll be sure.
This is the Quality News Network. In a landslide vote, the Senate this afternoon confirmed nominee Robert Gates as the new defense secretary. Gates formerly ran the CIA. The two votes against him came from conservative presidential supporters who said they didn't like Gates' criticism of White House policy in Iraq. The bipartisan Iraq Study Group report released today says President Bush's Iraq policy is not working and the stay-the-course strategy is not viable. After more than 3.5 years of war and the death of more than 2,900 American troops, the situation in Iraq was described as, quote, grave and deteriorating, end quote. The group recommends the U.S. military be pulled out by early 2008 and also suggests an increase in the number of troops assigned to train Iraqis, shifting America's mission from a combat to a support role. In Iraq today, 10 American troops were killed in separate attacks. 3 were killed yesterday. In Baghdad, an attack on a Shia marketplace killed at least 8 people. 40 were wounded. 45 new bodies were found scattered throughout the city. In London, Scotland Yard says the radiation poisoning death of Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko was murder. He died 2 weeks ago at a London hospital, blaming Russian President Vladimir Putin. The radioactive polonium-210 has been traced to a specific Russian nuclear facility. In Kinshasa, Joseph Kabila has been sworn in as president of the Congo, the first to be democratically elected. At 35, the youngest president on the continent, he promises to combat corruption within the Congolese government. In Milwaukee, an explosion at an industrial complex thought to have been started by propane killed 3 today and injured 37. An unconfirmed amount of workers remain missing. The blast was so powerful, witnesses felt it 1.5 miles away. In southern Oregon, the San Francisco father missing in a snowy rural area for more than a week was found dead today in a canyon. His wife and 2 children this week were found alive in their broken-down SUV. The man, a website editor, left his family to go for help. In Vietnam, at least 50 people are missing following Typhoon Durian. The storm killed more than 1,000 people in the Philippines last weekend. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
NASA's Global Surveyor spacecraft has taken images of what appears to be proof of the presence of water on the surface of Mars. Scientists are excited by the discovery the red planet may have at one time harbored life. Jamba Juice is warning customers strawberries previously used for smoothies may have been contaminated by Listerium, a potentially deadly bacteria. Taco Bell nationwide has removed green onions from its menus. Tests show the onions may have been responsible for the recent outbreak of E. coli, which has sickened dozens of customers in three states. Several top executives at Yahoo have lost their jobs in a major shakeup. The company's CFO will now be in charge of ad sales. The COO will leave the company. U.S. mortgage applications were up sharply last week, more than 8%. The increase was spurred by a surge in home refinancing loans. Interest rates on 30-year fixed-rate mortgages are currently at the lowest levels in a year. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.35 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 31 points at 12,301. NASDAQ down 9 at 2443. S&P 500 down 2 at 1412. Gold ended trading today at $636.30 an ounce. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
A couple of random notes. Our good friend Sue on Big Coal River wrote in to note that she just heard on CNN that Cheney's daughter is pregnant. And asks the trenchant question, wonder what Bush and his evangelical base think of that. And if you run over to WD40.com, D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, 40, WD40.com, they have an exclusive photo of Mary Cheney's baby's father. And, you know, it's as close to celebrity gossip as we're likely to get on this program. Now, it's prayer meeting, and this isn't exactly prayer meeting stuff, but I want to diverge or diverge. That's what I want to do from the standard fare and from the Iraq Study Group to share something with you. This I got this originally from our good friend Luke in Knoxville. And by way of a preface, a story from U.S. News and World Report, and that's about as close to mainstream media as any of this stuff ever gets. It's worth noting, though, while the Republicans have done everything in their power to make you terrified of people who happen to be Muslim, well, it turns out in the 10 years since the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, somewhere around 60 right-wing terrorist plots have been uncovered in the United States. And that's based on a report. Well, this news itself is out of a report from the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project. It came out a while back. You know, just by way of a reminder of what we're talking about. May 20th, 2005, two New Jersey men, Craig Orler and Gabriel Garafa, who allegedly belonged to neo-Nazi and skinhead groups, were charged with illegally selling to police informants guns and 60 pounds of urea to use in a bomb. October 25th, 2004.
April 10th, 2003, FBI raided the home of William Krar of Noonday, Texas, discovered an arsenal of more than 500,000 rounds of ammunition, 65 pipe bombs, and remote-controlled briefcase bombs, and almost 2 pounds of sodium cyanide, enough to make a bomb that could kill everyone in a large building. Krar was, of course, associated with white supremacist groups and considered himself a good Christian. Now, October 25th, 2004, FBI agents in Tennessee arrested Demetrius Van Crocker. They busted him trying to buy sarin nerve gas. Well, his case has finally come to an end. And yeah, justice appears to have been done. The case was the United States of America versus Demetrius Van Crocker. He was convicted of, in fact, trying to obtain sarin gas. And the extensive recordings were taken by the FBI. And the transcripts, or portions of the transcripts, are available at memphisflyer.com. If you search homegrown terrorist, you'll find the story. This guy, they said he had an IQ of something like 78. Let's see if we can find a couple of good quotes. Crocker and the agent, who was Burroughs, met in September 2004 in the parking lot of a McKenzie convenience store. You hear him on the tape say, "But they haven't got the VX gas on the site." "No, but I'm going to tell you, sarin is hell. I mean, VX, you get a drop of it on you, you start foaming at the mouth, and, you know, anyway, GB's the same thing. As far as lethality of it, it's the same. But Pine Bluff did not have VX. It has GB. It used to have mustard, but there is no mustard down there anymore." "Yeah, all right. I make that myself." Wait a minute. This is a discussion of the merits of sarin gas, VX gas, and mustard gas, and the homegrown terrorist says, "Yeah, I make my own mustard gas." You got to say it that way. Gas. The agent says, "Really? Really? Yeah, all you got to do for that is hydrochloric acid. Any of these platen factories, electroplating factories, if they do zinc platen, they got sodium cyanide, and you mix the two together. That's what falls in the bucket in the gas chamber. That makes the mustard gas." "Well, what happens if you breathe that in? Then it's your ass? Scares the hell out of you. When you take hydrochloric acid and sodium hydrochlorate, caustic soda, chemical name, you can mix those two together and get chlorine gas, and you can see chlorine gas, too. It's a giveaway." "What's it look like?" "That's a yeller fog, and if it's got any cyanide in the mixture, it'll make a red fog." "See, I used to work in an electric plating factory, and I played around in science in school." "So you ain't just a farmer?" "Ain't just a farmer. I just never had the money to go to college and be a chemist major. I've made nitroglycerin, too, but I wouldn't advise it. I haven't the schooling nor the stuff to quite do it to where it's stable enough to move around." From another part of the transcript, the agent says, "My thing is, there's a lot of people that'll talk your ear off all day long. You know what I mean? And he points at the girl in the back seat. "Right there's what we're fighting for, right there. Because that's endangered species right there, Crocker. You got that shit right. Big endangerment in this town." I can say that. It's from a transcript, Agnes. Don't worry, the FCC's not going to get us. "I'm going to tell you, that's the way it is, but what do you want to do?" "I ain't decided yet. Like I said, if I take a spell, I want to blow my lid. I can a bunch of sorry-ass government Oh, boy. Forgot about this. The children leave the room. We're going to do this again. Like I said, I take a spell. I want to blow my lid. I can a bunch of sorry-ass government motherfuckers down the drain. I want something that can do a bunch at a time with a minimum of ease. I understand. If I go out and if I go out the gate with that GB, then I'm past the point of no return. Yeah, how long is the shelf life on this stuff? How much do you want? How much do you want for it? Then it's one of those things where I ain't in it for the money. I mean, I'm just telling you, I'm not in it for the money. I'm tired of this shit. I'm not going to be responsible for where this country's going. I ain't wanting it to be no ruthless murder, you know. Only just certain people even have an idea of anything that I knowed. Trust all my life, that's just like me. You see no other way out, and you see an opportunity to strike a blow at them, then so be it. I'm not for going out here and just wasting honest people. Just dumb, 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 ignorant people. Yeah, not for that. So, something big, if I had to, federal courthouse. I'm going to tell you, in any war, there's collateral damage. Can't be helped. And the way things is now, everybody hollered about what Timothy McVeigh done. And I said, well, I don't like government, anything associated with the government. A building, I don't want my kids around it, because I know how I feel about the government, you know? And you top all that now. They ain't got to worry about home terrorists. Look at the Al-Qaeda. I mean, would you want your kids around a government building right now? School's bad enough. Yep. I ain't no cold, heartless murderer, but like I said, I feel the need come or something happening to the government, and I have an uprising. I want something, by God, that I can be on a side, even if we don't win. We got to make a hell of a smited blow. Smited blow. A hell of a smited blow against them. One man at a time. Now he's going to work on a suitcase bomb. You get me one of those and help me get it back to my country. We'll see whether the capitalists won the Cold War or not. You know, anything to get my hands on one. Talk about the government, railroad. My God, if there was 10 people over here and each had one of those that was sworn to use it. I mean, this country. You read the Turner Diaries, ain't you? Yeah, this country'd fall overnight. Each one, a preemptive city, a major, the largest populate there, or heavy area of military equipment, and man, but you got to get Washington, D.C. when the House and Senate's in session. Just go up there and blow it off. You ain't done shit. I mean, one of them bastards or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But you do it while they're all in session. You cut the head off the copperhead. You've got more vision than most people I've ever talked to.
Well, I always like Arnold Schwarzenegger made a mistake and said he idolized Adolf Hitler as a young boy. Me, too. I was a member of the American National Socialist Movement.
That's another thing I've always wanted in my license, is a helicopter. Yeah, then. Lower downtown Jackson, over on the far side of Kmart, Spookville, USA. You ever watch news on Channel 7? I don't think I get your Channel 7. And then he starts into the... Well, he's been convicted. Van Crocker. Van Crocker has never been anywhere near a copy of the Quran. Van Crocker would not speak to a Muslim if a Muslim was trying to save his life. Van Crocker considers himself an upright man of God and follower of Christ Jesus. Van Crocker does. Lord, Lord, Lord. But, you know, in the middle of all this, where was the debate about homegrown terrorism? That really, you know, as this, it's sort of worth it as this, this dueless, good-for-nothing, waste of money and waste of time and waste of oxygen Congress comes to a close. It's worth our effort to remember the stuff that they didn't do and the stuff they didn't pay attention to. How many other Vern Van, God, I want to call him Vern. How many other Van Crockers are there out there? How many other Van Crockers are out there? And see, Van's pretty stupid. I mean, granted, apparently he's made himself some poison gas a couple of times and darn near blew his butt off with homemade nitroglycerin, but how many others are out there who actually have taken it a little further than Van? And while we're all waiting for the next big Arab terrorist attack, how many good, upstanding, won't-miss-an-election-day-going-to-the-polls Republican voters are plotting your doom and mine? Now, we've had the discussion about how we're not going to live in fear, but that doesn't mean we're not going to live with our eyes open. How many copies, and, you know, you can find this out, this is just rhetorical, you don't have to tell me the number, how many copies of the Turner Diaries have been sold in the United States? And that's where he got the idea, you know, well, you know, you take out the Congress and you cut the head off the copperhead. God almighty. You didn't hear about Van Crocker on Katie Couric's perky CBS Evening News, did you? You didn't hear about Van Crocker on Brian Williams' NBC Evening News. Van Crocker didn't make the ABC Evening News. God knows Van Crocker didn't make Fox, because Fox is counting on the Van Crockers of the world to keep them afloat. Same for CNN. Glenn Beck would, headline news, Glenn Beck would think that Van Crocker was a misguided American hero. And it should be heard far and wide. Everybody in America should know about Van Crocker. How many Americans do you suppose know what a good, upstanding Christian Timothy McVeigh considered himself to be? How many? Not nearly enough. Wonder if Timothy McVeigh's church has gotten around to yanking his membership yet. Hard to tell. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Luke, who provided me with that story to begin with, is with us on the line. Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm glad you're retelling that story. It's like I say, and the thing is, he's just one story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's see, I got the article here that I sent you, the USA article. And let's see, was the guy in Texas was sentenced to 11 years after he stockpiled enough sodium cyanide to kill everyone inside a 30,000 square foot building. They had one in Utah. See, two men described as domestic terrorists plead guilty setting arson fires. Oh, I mean, it just goes on and on. You know what I mean?
The Bush administration can't pursue them too hard because, after all, that's their base.
I know. That's what you mean. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's I don't know if you got anybody you know down there, but sometime you ought to call somebody down the Southern Poverty Law Clinic. You know, and see who they're keeping an eye on that we don't hear about.
Oh, that's that's a great idea. I'll jot that down right now. I'm not kidding. We should do a regular update with the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah, because you know it's like we said one night that, you know, I'm just waiting for the day. Like I say, the next time somebody, you know, we heard about that. I called that Menzel reject. That the one up was up in Minnesota. The one who crashed into the women's clinic.
Yeah.
Turns out it wasn't even a clinic that did abortion. You know, I think he ended himself.
Well, for every Eric Rudolph we catch, how many are out there plotting and being, you know, and being encouraged by the right to life movement?
Well, it's like I said, it's like I said the other night. I said, just be happy. This is one they caught. Imagine what happens when you finally meet the one who manages to find his companion redneck working for the National Guard or the U.S. Army that says, here, come on in. We'll see what we can get you.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, you mean the fact that they're actively recruiting them now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're sitting there recruiting skinheads. So you got to wonder who they're living on
now,
the outside.
Yeah, and be careful because people might think you're joking, Luke. You're not.
I'm not.
I mean,
that's a lot of problem with that.
They already know how to lace the combat boots.
Yeah. So you know what I mean. So I'm sure they're in.
Got to break them of the urge to goose step.
Now,
I mean, I'm being a little bit of a smart aleck.
No,
I understand.
No, you're right. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, say, you know, what's the best way to destroy a system is to take it out from the inside. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure that some of these white supremacist group are lining up to join. You know, this is their free chance.
And
I'm sure they've got some of their people who've never been arrested. They're saying, shave, make yourself look presentable, go sign up. You know, pretend you don't know us. So, you know, who knows with that? I mean, God. But now today, like I say, I see the Smoke and Mirrors report came in.
Oh, you know, that's the, I've printed it off. It took a bunch of printer paper, and the better part of a really expensive ink tank. But you know what I can get out of it so far is that it doesn't do much of anything.
No, it's sort of like Rumsfeld's farewell address. It just throws a whole bunch of ideas out there, and sort of like, well, yeah, you can take these. If you do, we'll take credit for it. If you don't, we'll say, well, you just didn't get around to it.
But you know, on the one hand, it says, the situation is grave in Iraq, and it's it more or less says that we can't win. And on the other hand, it says we need more troops.
I want to know, is there a section there where it says, Miss Rice, what the hell are you doing?
Well, I'm still looking for the chapter, Smart Aleck again. I'm still looking for the chapter that says, Answer Hazy, Ask Again Later.
Magic 8-Ball says.
Yeah, well, it was that or a Ouija board as far as I... But when you look at the makeup of the commission...
Oh, yeah. I guess who I saw just a minute ago was on CNN about the commission. Alan Simpson.
He's insane.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I'm sitting there going, okay, if you want to send him over to Fox, good. Crazy talks to crazy. But it's like, you know, I remember, who was it he went off against?
Well, he was on Bill Maher one evening, and he completely lost his marbles.
I remember that. It's like every time I see him on, I think somebody should take that tape and play it. You know what I mean? Because, like you say, he lost it.
Well,
totally.
But yeah, Alan Simpson, the one I've been beating on tonight, Edwin Meese.
Oh, God.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
It's like, it's shameful when you got Edwin Meese who actually makes John Ashcroft look almost normal.
You know, why not just go ahead and go for the trifecta and get George Shultz on there while you're at it?
Oh, God.
You know, him and his little tiger tattoo on his ass.
Oh, God. Well, you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, say, this was smoke and mirrors. All this was the political cover. If you'd have wanted a real group, you should have had General Senseki. You had
how about General Shalakashvili?
Yeah,
I just like saying Shalakashvili. But no, seriously, there are people. Not so much for me. But how about Norman Schwarzkopf?
There are a lot of good military people that everybody knows that would have totally respected without even looking at them. I looked at their military list, and I think I recognized one name.
Well, okay, here's one that'll destroy all my credibility for suggesting that they wanted anything meaningful to come of this. How about putting Cindy Sheehan on that committee?
True. That's Breitwiser.
Kristen Breitwiser. Yeah. How about somebody who has lost something in all of this?
Maybe a member of the Tillman family.
That would work. You know, how about Jack Murtha? But see, what we're talking about here is actually the people who should be heard from. This is the reason, you know, you understand, Luke, why this had to come out right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it couldn't come out after the new Congress takes its seat, because when the new Congress takes its seat, you will hear from Eric Shinseki, and you will hear from Kristen Breitwiser, and you will hear from Cindy Sheehan, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll hear from the Tillmans, and you'll hear from maybe Schwarzkopf, maybe and John Murtha is going to have a chance to have his say. He hasn't just gone away.
Oh, no, but like you said, they spent the last month with these leaks so they could knock down ideas. Now, like I say, you've essentially got another month till the Democrats take over. So for this next month, they're going to sit and cut this up. They're going to cut it up in little pieces. By the time of the year runs around, you ain't going to be able to find a piece of paper more than an inch square.
And they're going to cut and they're going to run from it.
But the only thing I heard tonight was, the new one they're already shooting down is, apparently they're shooting down no diplomatic. We don't want to talk to Syria or Iran or any of these other people.
Well, no, you can't, because if you start talking to Iran and Syria, you might solve the problem.
Well, I was sitting there going, and I heard a couple things people mentioned here, and I thought of a couple more. I was sitting there, I was listening on to Hardball tonight. They had,
You're a better man than I am, you
well,
know that?
Well, Tweety ain't on there tonight.
Oh, well, okay.
They had the guy from Boston got thrown off his paper. Barnacle.
Oh, yeah.
He was the host. So I can live with him, you know what I mean. And he was talking to him, and they were talking about it, said, why don't they get all the former presidents together? And I'm sitting there going, okay, let's get George Mitchell, and we can get Baker. Let's all go over there, and let's all get all them together. Let's go over and talk to these people. Because I say, George ain't never going to do it. Let George go over in the corner and talk to the pictures.
Get him a cow to talk to.
Well, like I say,
and a horse to milk.
Take Baker and Mitchell, who are probably two of the best at this, and then take... Oh, did you see the thing today? The picture of Clinton?
No.
He was... where was he? He was somewhere... Where's Bush ever been recently? He was somewhere, and he was being just bobbed by people because they loved him. And I was sitting there going, yeah, a month ago they were out there with torches and pitchforks looking for George W. And it was like, okay.
it's the good guy, the guy that didn't kill us.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Take Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and even Pappy Bush, just so you say you got somebody on the other side, and take Mitchell and Baker, and let's go have a talk. They can talk about anybody. You know what I mean?
But of course,
George will never admit anybody else can do it, and he was never wrong. So
well, but see, he called Iran the axle of evil. So we can't have talks with him,
Mr. Ahmadinejad.
But the thing is, the single most valid point that Iraq Study Group report has to offer is its observation that we have got to begin to solve the conflict between the Israelis and everybody else.
It's like I say, you got to do the whole thing. I don't know if it'll work or not. But like I say, that's why I'm thinking getting all five of those guys together. Because get them, let's just do the whole Mideast. It may not work, but it may be the best chance we ever have to do it. Let's get Iraq, get Syria, get the Israelis, get the Egyptians, get the Saudis, it's sort of like, gang. We've all reached the point we can't do this anymore. We're just going to fix this. If we have to go back, there is no more Iraq. Congratulations. It's now back to Mesopotamia. we're going to pull out the maps from 100 years ago. Let's all use these maps, and we'll go back to where everything was.
Well, of course, that means...
Well, not Israel, but you know what I mean.
No, but that also means that Iran gets a whole bunch of Iraq.
Right now, I don't see that as a problem, really. And I'm sure some of the people there probably would rather have that happen because it probably straightened out some of the stuff.
Well, there are ways to open this dialogue, and I'm just enough of a crazy liberal to think that if you can talk your way out of getting more of your own people and somebody else's slaughtered, somehow, if you can reach an agreement, if you can agree that you, if the starting agreement is that you hate each other's guts, but you can look at each other and say it instead of pulling guns, you've started something. It's the movie reference. We always have to have a movie reference, don't we?
Of course.
The end of the Patton movie.
Oh.
Where George C. Scott refuses to drink a toast to the fall of Nazi Germany with the Russian general. And he says, "But I will drink to the fact that you're a son of a bitch."
I do love that scene.
Yeah, and the other general laughs, and they toast the fact that each other is SOBs. That is the beginning of a dialogue.
There's nothing there we can agree on. We hate each other. Okay, that's an agreement. We've agreed to that. We hate each other.
Yeah.
What
now
can we do with that?
And there are things you can do with that.
Yeah.
We hate each other, but we don't want to kill each other. Wow, that's step two.
It's like, guys, if we don't figure out something else, it's like everybody pull the gun, let's turn the lights out and see who's left. You know? It's like that's our option at the end of the road. If we don't want to reach that end of the road, we got to find an off ramp before we get there. You know what I mean? There's the dead end at the end of the road. The end of the road is we kill each other. Okay.
But this is part of a pattern, Luke. We don't want to talk to North Korea. We don't want to talk to Iran.
Well, you saw the thing, didn't you, today on North Korea? Now, apparently Bush is to the point now. He's going back to the old Clinton idea. That apparently they're down to the point now that they've been able to do anything else North Korea. Essentially, now they're offering them the deal that Clinton had given them.
Because it wasn't a bad deal in the first place.
It wasn't a great deal, but it wasn't a bad deal either. You know what I mean?
Your people don't starve. You don't build bombs.
We don't blow the heck out of you. Just because you finally killed that one nerve that was holding us all together.
And we send a steady stream of fresh porno to Kim Jong Il.
It's like, hey, if you want to do that, you know, that's sort of like the.
I'm being facetious, Luke, but you know, these are people with human failings and human faults and human wants and human needs, and if you address them on that level,
it's sort of like the thing with him over there. It's like, look, if you'll leave, we'll give you every, you know, we'll contact the people at Vivid and give you a copy of every porn they've ever made.
Well, sure.
You know?
And the Bush White House has the connections. What's her name? Mary Carey. And the Republican Party.
On the other end, hey, we worked this out.
Right. You know, so it might seem a little bit smart-alecky, but that's the way you do things. If you listen to your right-wing radio, you know that they have scorned, they have just heaped tons of scorn on Madeleine Albright because, well, you know, Madeleine Albright went to Pyongyang and she took an autographed basketball from Michael Jackson. You know, Michael Jordan. The gloves were autographed by Michael Jackson. They took a little boy autographed by Michael Jackson.
Oh boy.
No, but
too
she...
Far. Step too far. Back up.
I know. But no, I mean, she really did. It was a jersey or a basketball autographed by Michael Jordan. And
well, I mean, you remember what happened, you know, like, say, in the 70s when it was Nixon. You know, we traded stuff with the Chinese. Pandas and, you know, and all this stuff, you know, animals through the zoo. Hey! You know, any way you have to get your foot in the door.
Well, what was it? Ping pong diplomacy?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember watching Wide World of Sports as a kid, and it was the Chinese ping pong players versus, and, you know, then later it shows up in Forrest Gump.
And like I say, it's a start.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like you say, sometimes just agreeing we aren't going to kill each other today is a start.
And you know, underlying it all, Luke, and I think... It's easy to forget this, and now's the obligatory Nazi reference. Just got done reading a history of the SS.
Okay.
And at the end, after Himmler is dead, in doing the sort of post-mortem on the whole thing, the author says that you know, he's reviewed, and it's an older book. It was like 1978 publication. He says, you know, I've reviewed just about everything that's been written to date on the SS and on the Nazi leadership. And he says, these people come down to this conclusion that they're so surprised to find out that these weren't just evil, mad scientists working in the laboratory and cackling insanely to themselves. You know, Himmler came from an accounting background and a clerking background. And they were just utterly, completely boring normal.
Until when?
Until you factor in the evil stuff.
Well, it's like they always say, you know, it's like say when it's a serial killer, you always have the next door neighbor. He was such a quiet young man.
He seemed to be a bit of a loner.
Always said hello to me on his way in and out. Yes.
But the point, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs applies to Kim Jong Il and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and George Bush. And Tony Blair, everybody has the same basic needs. Mm-hmm. And in conjunction with that, they have their likes and their dislikes. You know, if Mahmoud Ahmadinejad thinks that, you know, if he enjoys, because there was something about him going to a soccer match in Germany a while back or something, if that's his gig, bring him a signed soccer ball from Beckham.
Yeah. We'll let him and the wife sign it. We don't care, you know how it is.
Or Maradona or whoever.
Yeah. Well, fine. We'll get one from Pele. Hell.
Right. Appeal to a person's human instincts.
Well, you know, did you see the thing? One of the things that's kind of slipping through the cracks, and I've seen it a couple of times when they've been doing the interviews with their people over in the Mideast, that apparently the boys in Lebanon are about, our little puppet government over in Lebanon is about to go bye-bye. Because, you know, they were showing over there, had like a million people protesting that government. So, you know, the Hamas has turned out all their people. That essentially they're saying, you know, get out.
And see, that's a little calling card to the U.S. too. We're going to do this, and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And what that does, you know, our prestige, Luke, is so damaged. It is so fractured.
Well, a lot of people do not realize how bad it has gotten now. You know what I mean? Because we're I guess in a way kind of see it almost every day in that respect. But like I say, around the world, not as much maybe in the European sections, but like in the Asian and then the Middle East. How far we've dropped, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where, like I say, you know, it's like the thing I saw about with Clinton, you know. But most people right now, you know, I'd be afraid to go out walking in most countries. I'd have to be saying, yes, I'm Australian, yes.
Right, yeah, I'm Canadian, eh?
Eh, yeah. Anybody want a beer? Eh.
I got some Molson.
But like I say, it's getting to that point. You know what I mean? It's like, buddy, a lot of people are essentially doing that. They're almost afraid, you know, to say we're an American.
Well, you know, I was listening to Bruce one night, and he was talking. I think it was his addiction show, and he was talking about the fact that Iran, and it's not something we think about. Iran has a huge Narcotics Anonymous organization. They won't let AA in because, you know, the Quran says that there is no alcohol.
Yeah.
So if you have an alcohol problem, well, you know, that you just ignore and, you know, say that, you know, that's the devil.
He's just that funny smelling water.
But they have a terrible, terrible heroin and opium, the hashish, you know, all the fun Oriental drugs.
Well,
they've got terrible problems with all that, and you know, NA came from the U.S., and Iran let them in, Luke.
Yeah. I mean, they realized past the point, you know, we got to do something about this. I mean, you just saw the thing, was it about a week, maybe not even a week ago, where they were talking about the fact that, guess what? Over in Afghanistan, they're having record crops of opium.
Yeah.
You know, it's like saying, you know, guys, I'm sorry. I mean, we may have the mayor of Kabul. President Karzai, you know, the Unical exec, but it's one of those things. It's like, guys, I think we should take the people out of Iraq and let's all go to Afghanistan and do a little cleanup work.
Well, or it's going to wind up. Maybe it's already there again. You know,
yeah.
if you buy into the idea that all the hell and damnation of 9/11 was fomented in Afghanistan, their ability to do that is perhaps stronger than it has ever been before.
Yeah. Because, like I say, that's their money base. You know, when they get cut off from all the other royal families and all that, they give them money. I say that's where their money comes from. Then is from the narcotics trade.
Well, it's just it's pathetic that, or maybe it's to be expected that folks who live ordinary lives can think in ordinary terms, Luke.
Well, like I say, you have to think about living day to day. Then you go to the bigger steps. You know, I think I've told Agnes before, I've told you, I said, man has those two bad habits, eating and living indoors. You know, once you get past them, everything else is kind of bonus time.
Yeah. And you know, what was that story I saw yesterday? 2% of the world controls 98% of the wealth or something like that.
Yeah.
And when we talk about, in that story, when we're talking about wealth, we're talking about land. We're talking about a roof over a head. We're not talking about, you know, swimming pools and movie stars.
Just enough to keep the life going day to day.
Yeah. One of the things I noted the study reported was that the wealthier a nation is and the wealthier an individual is, it means that he or she is less likely to have to use the land that they control or own to produce food. You know, I'm very fortunate. I've got enough ground here to get a garden in every year, and I love my garden. I hope I get to have my garden this spring. But, you know, most people, even you see a good number of gardens in West Virginia and probably Tennessee, too, Kentucky. But, you know, not like it was, you know, not the victory gardens of World War II, not the shared sacrifice. And this, it is unrealistic to ask the military families to continue to shoulder the sacrificial burdens of this war without asking anything of the American people.
You know, it's like saying, you know, the thing I think that we'll see, when all this ever comes to an end, I think the thing that's going to be the biggest crime, if you want to call it a crime in it, was that right after 9/11, if we'd have had a President Gore or somebody else, I think we would have had a chance to bring the world together. You know, that first couple of weeks after 9/11, George Bush could have almost solved tension in the Middle East. You know, if he'd have made the right decisions. You know, because right then, like they say, they had people marching in our favor in Tehran.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like all Europe was behind us. As I say, if he'd have just worked for something for the common good of all. Do go shopping, and if you're not with us, you're against us.
You know, that's one of the things that makes him so loathsome.
Because like, I mean, he had the chance.
We could sit and we can make jokes, Luke, about, you know, how he butchers the language or how not very smart he is, but it's the stuff that he's done in deadly earnest that is the most shameful. Hey, go out, go shopping, see this great nation, fly to Disney World.
Well, you know, it's like the thing we talked about one night. I said, the thing of it is, he's his most articulate when he's talking about killing people. I said, anything else, he's not very articulate, but boy, when he talks about killing people, he's just dead on.
He doesn't stutter, he doesn't mispronounce anything. No, rock solid.
Mm-hmm. Like I say, he's almost an oratory when he's talking about killing.
It's, yeah.
Bob, I see what time it is. I'm going to let you go so you can get somebody else in.
Well, I've enjoyed the conversation, Luke, and thanks again for pointing me to that story about Van Crocker.
Well, like I say, we need to get somebody from, like, say, Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea.
Because, like I say, there's so many of these groups and people, individuals. I mean, most of these are individuals, but there's groups out there, you know what I mean, that we don't hear about on a daily basis, on a national. Locally, you may hear about it. Like, sometime when you talk to David, ask him what he's heard, or, you know, over in Nashville about that, because I heard it the other day on Tom Hartman. If I hadn't heard that, I didn't know about it. I know I remember reading it a couple years ago, but that's the last I heard on it.
Yeah.
So, all right, you have a good evening.
All right, you take care,
I'll stay
Luke.
Warm tomorrow.
Yeah, all right.
Bye.
Bye now. This is, I suppose, the bespoke suit, French collar type, French cuff types, would say that I just don't have an adequate understanding of the realities of world diplomacy. And I suppose there's possibility of truth in that. But for my part, people remain people. We are separated, as is always the case, and is one of the reasons that, and I'll say this being prayer meeting night, we are separated by religion. Oh, well, you know, he prays different. That must mean he's a bad person. No, look at that. I mean, that fella stands at the top of that tower and hollers his fool head off five times a day. They must be bad. They're weird. How weird are we? You know, I've got we talked briefly at one point a week or so ago about the fact that this conference was going to take place at Saddleback Church, and all the little right wingers got up in arms because Rick Warren, the pastor thereof, had invited none other than Barack Obama to speak. And, of course, they had the hissy because Barack Obama doesn't insist on imposing his dictates on what a woman chooses to do with her own insides. Oh, they got freakishly angry. But Rick Warren said, nope. The invitation stands. So I ran across a follow-up article about the World AIDS Day Summit this past Friday at Saddleback Church. And I'm just gonna share the words straight out of the article. It was by Tim Grieve at Salon. He writes, as he opened his remarks Friday at a World AIDS Day Summit at Rick Warren's Saddleback Church, Republican Senator Sam Brownback... I've read this a dozen times, and every time I get Sam Brownback... As he opened his remarks Friday at a World AIDS Day Summit at Rick Warren's Saddleback Church, Republican Senator Sam Brownback said he was feeling a little more, quote-unquote, comfortable than he did the last time he shared a stage with Barack Obama. Quote, we were both addressing the NAACP, Brownback explained. They were very polite to me, but I think they kind of wondered, who's this guy from Kansas? And then Barack Obama follows, and they're going, okay, now we got Elvis. Figuring that their joint appearance at an Orange County evangelical church finally put the shoe on the other foot, Brownback turned to Obama. Now, bear in mind, this is... I don't know if you've ever seen photographs of the inside of this thing, but my God, it's like the best rock and roll 10,000 seat venue you've ever seen. Jumbotrons across the front, monstrous sound systems, a stage bathed in the very best theatrical lighting, and so there stands Sam Brownback, who incidentally has visions or delusions, some might say, of being president and getting to finally put all the homosexuals to the sword or maybe in jail and making sure that every woman has to carry every baby to term, even if it kills her. That's Senator Brownback. Figuring their joint appearance at an Orange County evangelical church finally put the shoe on the other foot, Brownback turned to Obama and said, this is in a church. Brownback turned to Obama and said, welcome to my house. And the audience of evangelicals just howled with laughter. A little bit later, when Obama had the chance to speak, he returned to what Brownback had said, and he said, quote, there's one thing I've got to say, Sam. This is my house, too, because this is God's house. And the evangelicals laughed nervously. But you see, that's the inherent, and make no mistake, racism and bigotry of the evangelical right. Now, Sam Brownback was raised a Methodist, and then when he became a young adult, he double-clutched and shifted gears and became the charismatic evangelical or whatever, you know, snake handling and strychnine drinking freak. And then after that, he abandoned that, and why, maybe somebody could help me with, the article describes as with the help of Pennsylvania Senator Rick Man on Dog Santorum, converted, get this, Methodist to snake handler to Roman Catholic. Just gives you the cold shivers, doesn't it? So a little further down in the article, the writer, Tim Grieve, says, if that's what Friday's opportunity meant, Obama made the most of it. Brownback recited, and by what it means, this counts as a political move. Mark Silk, director of the Greenberg Center for the Study of Religion and Public Life at Trinity College, told the Chicago Tribune earlier this week, it means he's not beyond the pale. We're willing to regard him as a part of the conversation. Well, how charming. We're willing to regard Obama as part of the conversation. I'm not going to say anything nasty or sarcastic or faux racist at this point. I think you're probably already saying them yourself. If that's what Friday's opportunity meant, Obama made the most of it. Brownback recited Psalm 100 from memory and pulled a well-worn Bible from his coat pocket to read the story of Lazarus. You know, and I just where do all these right-wing religion industry fake Christians get those well-worn Bibles? I mean, is there a well-worn Bible supply store that caters to nothing but right-wing religion industry freaks? I mean, is it? I remember several years ago there were some blue jeans that you paid extra money for because they'd hung them on the clothesline and shot them with a 12-gauge shotgun to make that special ripped-up look. Is there a small team of underpaid people out there wearing the leather covers of a Bible to make it look like it's actually been read? Because you know what? I doubt that Sam Brownback spends any more time in the Bible than George W. Bush does. It's for thumping, not reading. Obama followed by quoting from Corinthians. Well, I'll bet you 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I have not love, I am as sounding brass. And saying that his Bible teaches him that, quote, God sent his only Son to earth to heal the sick and comfort the weary, to feed the hungry and to clothe the naked, to befriend the outcast and to redeem those who strayed from righteousness. In other words, everything that the right-wing religion industry wants nothing to do with. A little further down in the article. But watching the two men make their way through the day, there was no way to forget their appearances came in the early days of a presidential race in which they both may be contenders. Exit polls taken in conjunction with last month's midterm elections show Democrats closing the God gap. Maybe it's just a temporary thing. Conservative Christians can be as upset as anybody about an unending war, slow economy, and government corruption. But Democrats have spent much of the last 2 years talking about how they need to do a better job of talking about faith, and in Obama, they could have a presidential candidate who can actually do it. But see, that's the place where we're still missing the boat with the religion industry. That line about Christians can be upset as anybody about an unending war. No, real Christians are upset about starting wars. These phonies are only upset about the war after they've helped to start it. If it was going well, if it was going swimmingly, they'd be thrilled. And that's the simple truth. Then there's a line, Jay Hine, who's the director of George W. Bush's Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives, said he's hopeful that Democrats like Obama and newly elected North Carolina Representative Heath Shuler will be joining the Republicans in the, take your medicine, compassion space. We hope they will join us in the compassion space. I'll leave the swearing to you. That's it. Thanks, everybody, for your participation, your time, for all that you share with us. My lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes, produced the program. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, engineered it. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Head On Radio Network. Brian Reznor announced the program this evening. All of these programs happen because there are several thousand dedicated brothers and sisters of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up every day and go and build the American dream. By building the American dream and supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington today, the bipartisan Iraq Study Group released its report. It concluded that President Bush's Iraq policy is, quote, not working. After more than 3.5 years of war and more than 2,900 American troops killed, the situation in Iraq was described as, quote, grave and deteriorating, end quote. The Iraq Study Group recommended that U.S. combat troops be pulled out of Iraq by early 2008. The panel also advised an increase in the number of U.S. troops embedded to train the Iraqis. The group also recommended that if the Iraqi government does not meet benchmarks or goals toward establishing security, the U.S. should reduce its political, military, or economic support. The U.S. military said 10 American troops were killed today in Iraq in 4 separate incidents, including improvised explosive device attacks. 5 of the troops were killed in the north and 5 in the Anbar province. 27 American soldiers have died so far in December. Also today in Baghdad's Shiite district, Sadr City, a mortar attack on a market followed by a suicide bombing killed at least 8 people, 40 were wounded. Floor debate in the Senate on President Bush's nominee to be the next defense secretary, Robert Gates, will start today. Yesterday, after a full day of confirmation hearings before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Gates won unanimous approval, 24-0. In London today, Scotland Yard announced it will treat the radiation poisoning death of Alexander Litvinenko, a critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, as murder. He died 2 weeks ago at a London hospital. Near downtown Milwaukee today, an explosion at an industrial complex killed at least 3 people. At least 37 were reported injured. It is unknown how many workers are still missing. The blast was so powerful, witnesses said, it could be felt a mile and a half away. In southern Oregon, 100 rescuers and 4 helicopters concluded their search for a California man who was stranded.